go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! There are some nights when there's just so much wonderful material out there that you wonder how, that, well, it's just a shame only to have 3 hours, and this is one of those nights. The stars have aligned in some sort of harmonic liberal radio convergence, and we could do 6 hours. But we're not. We're going to do three. But they're going to be three absolutely packed hours, including your observations, your phone calls, your emails, your participation in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. You know how to get there, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chat room. And by the way, just to let you know, for the many of you from whom I got emails saying, hey, Bob, the website's down, there has been a significant amount of maintenance done on the website in the preceding 24 hours. And that's because, the intrepid John Fox just absolutely got on a roll and went to fixing stuff, which is it's going to be the website's just getting better and better and better. So just so you wouldn't fret. No, all is well, all is okay. So what do I mean about the program being chock-a-block tonight? Well, it really, really is. Of course, you can't ignore the healthcare summit that happened today, especially in light of the fact that, well, I don't mean to make light of it, because it's so damn serious. Any of you who saw Keith Olbermann's comment last night from his program, if you were not moved by that, you have no heart and you have no soul. Wait, that's what I mean. See, the Repiglicans were not moved by that. But the fact of the matter is, Keith was describing something playing out that happens, and worse, all over this country every day. And for some, the outcome is even worse than what Keith was describing, because for 45,000 Americans a year, the outcome is grim death. It just is. There's no not talking about it. It just is. And my heart sort of broke watching what Keith offered last night, because that is a road in which I have left my own shoe prints. And it's tough. And it's miserable. And it's sadder than hell. And it doesn't have to be that way. So if you have not seen Keith's comment from last night, the 24th of February, make a point of doing so. Make a point of doing so. And it was rendered, the comment, in anticipation of the healthcare summit that took place today. And from the Republican side of things, my God, my God, my God. There's always a certain amount of wonderment when you're a child and you go to the circus for the first time and you see all those clowns getting out of that tiny little car. Well, the same thing happened today with the Republicans unloading at the healthcare summit. They didn't send their most serious policy wonks. They didn't send their most statesperson-like individuals. They sent their biggest clowns. No kidding. They really, really did. And to sort of reinforce that point, coming up in about, 10 minutes or so, we're going to have a conversation with Bill Scheer. Bill Scheer is from the Campaign for America's Future. And he did a rundown of who the right wing was sending to the healthcare summit. It reads like a rogues gallery of people who need to be in a rubber room, frankly. And so Bill will join us to talk about it a little bit this evening. Of course, there was endless, almost ceaseless coverage of the healthcare summit today. But one of them, one particular notation, caught my eye. Because, you know, we're so fascinated with the MB twins, Michelle and Marcia.
Marcia.
Marcia Blackburn from Tennessee. She was sent. See what I mean? Yeah, they sent Marcia Blackburn to the healthcare summit when the poor woman hath not enough cerebral power. I imagine she wears either slip-ons or things with Velcro or straps across the foot, because I doubt she has the cerebral power with which to tie her own shoelaces. But I saw one comment that she made earlier this afternoon. She said we need to fix health care by allowing competition that would let people purchase insurance across state lines. And, of course, never mind the fact that you can't purchase insurance across state lines or across county lines if you can't afford the insurance. I mean, that kind of goes without saying, doesn't it? Well, not to a repiglickin'. To a repiglickin', it's all about figuring out ways to continue to serve and support. You know, the GOP seal should just have, to defend and to serve, and then underneath corporate interests stamped on it as Anthony Weiner, or Weiner, not sure which, Democrat from New York, mentioned the other day in the well of the House. They are a wholly owned subsidiary of the insurance industry. And the Republicans, they were so offended. They were offended. But Marcia Blackburn, she's going to fix all the health care woes by allowing people to purchase insurance across state lines. And I got to thinking, why would a congresswoman from Tennessee think that, of course, that was her assigned talking point. Yeah, Mr. Boner, Lady Boner, Pumpkinhead, I want to talk about buying insurance across state lines. Okay, Marcia, you do that. But I was suddenly reminded of what it was like growing up as a boy in Alabama, where fireworks were illegal. Couldn't buy a firecracker, not a bottle rocket, the occasional smoke bomb would be smuggled in from 11 miles away in far foreign Tennessee. And that's my point. If you were an Alabamian who wanted to set off bottle rockets on the 4th of July or New Year's Eve or whatever, you had to cross state lines to purchase your fireworks. You had to go to Tennessee. Imagine that. That's Marcia Blackburn's model for fixing health care. Do it just like they do at Loco Joe's Crazy Indian Fireworks there in Goodlettsville. The Goodlettsville-Hendersonville Pike used to be one long string of neon-lit fireworks stores. I don't know if it is anymore. I doubt it. My father, driving back and forth from Alabama to West Virginia, my father hated the Goodlettsville-Hendersonville Pike worse than any other part of the drive, because invariably we would be going through it as dark was falling, and all of those flashing, blinking lights for Loco Joe's and Crazy Eddie's were just blinding. I remember, Margaret, it amazes me that there's not a wreck here every 15 seconds from all these blinking, distracting lights for otherwise unsuspecting motorists like us. Oh, I know, Kenneth, I know. It's terrible. You want another cup of coffee? Then we'll go through the passing dad a cup of coffee thing some other night. It was a joy to behold. But that's how Marcia Blackburn wants to fix the healthcare coverage crisis in America. Just let him go to Loco Joe's Indian Trading Post Insurance Emporium and buy him some Cross State Lines Insurance. Works for us here in Tennessee. If it wasn't so damnably, tragically serious, they would be funny. Early on, President Obama chided Eric Cantor. Remember Eric Britney Spears fan Cantor? The guy who, after, what was it that he left early to go and see Britney? Leave Britney alone! He brought, you know, some 22-inch stack of papers so he could see how big the bill is. It's 2,400 pages. President Obama said, I see you brought your hand props. Ugh. Well, it was off to a very, very merry start, and one wonders if anything was accomplished. I was just checking headlines, but as is my wont before the show starts. And I saw one, and I'm trying to find it here. Just one second. There it is. Tempers flare at healthcare summit. Really? You mean somebody said somebody wasn't particularly crazy about the way that whole sickening thing was going down? After a day of debate and disagreement, President Barack Obama concluded Thursday's unprecedented live talk fest on healthcare with the bleak assessment that accord between Democrats and Republicans may not be possible. Tempers flare? Well, the fact of the matter is, at the end of the debate, President Obama did say we cannot have another year-long debate about this. Ultimately, the question is, what does that mean? What does it mean? If it means he's ready to haul Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi into the Oval Office and say, pass this sucker by reconciliation or don't come back, then that may be a good thing. Because certainly this was a show of good faith. This was every opportunity in the world for the Republicans to participate in the process. I mean, wasn't it? But if half of the participants show up in a clown car, what do you expect to get out of it? For that matter, if you invite clowns to a serious discussion, who's crazy when the clowns behave like clowns? Do you follow my meaning? And we've gotten other examples of clownishness in other areas for later on in the program. But really, if you invite clowns to a serious discussion and the clowns still behave like clowns, why would any of us be surprised? It's what clowns do. You know, they wear big rubber noses and floppy shoes and fright wigs, and they say and do crazy things. Welcome to the Republican Party, for the love of God. As promised earlier, I have on the line right now with us Bill Scheer, who penned a lovely little piece over at Campaign for America's Future entitled Ready for Their Close-Up? GOP to Bring the Crazy into Healthcare Summit Spotlight. Yeah, how true. So let's go ahead and bring Bill on the line just to get his take on what this was, what was accomplished, and maybe where we go from here. Bill Scheer, thank you very much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's a real joy, because when I saw the piece over at ourfuture.org, I thought, this is beautiful.
it wrote itself.
Well, when you're dealing with Republicans, it's like having a team of writers. I don't think that the guys that work with Jon Stewart have to really do much at all.
I mean, in all honesty, all I did for that post yesterday was, because the list of summit invitees came out in the afternoon, and it's not like I had to take their names and put in a specific quote to find the exact crazy thing that they said. I just put in their names by themselves into Google, and the crazy stuff would float to the top of the Google search.
I think the Google has a Bozo algorithm. I think that's what it's called. It's the Bozo algorithm. And just to give folks a sense of some of what we're talking about here, Representative Paul Ryan was part of the contingent today, and he's famous, isn't he, Bill, for his Medicare privatization plan.
Well, he actually developed an entire budget alternative, which is so radical that the Republican Party leadership has been reluctant to formally embrace it, even though it is simply an expression of what it is they believe. He has had the audacity to actually put it on paper and put some numbers on it, and actually spells out this is what would happen if we privatize Medicare, privatize Social Security, and to try to balance the budget that way.
But for God's sakes, a line like rationing happens today, the question is who will do it?
Well, that's the quote that I pulled. That was ferreted out by Ezra Klein at the Washington Post, who sat him down for an interview. Paul Ryan is sort of an interesting guy in that respect, in that he will actually carry out conservative ideas to their conclusion much of the time. And so, you'll see Obama actually likes to intellectually spar with him at these sessions, because at least Ryan will actually speak back and engage in a back and forth. But what you see is what conservatism actually represents, which is essentially a total dismantling of our retirement security, our social safety net, and the like, which is what most Americans do not want.
Well, we've sort of pressed that theory along the way here at the Horn, Bill, and we've come to the conclusion that what we're dealing with here are we call them anarcho-randians. They're not conservatives. They're not capitalists. They're not free marketeers. They are anarcho-randians. And in point of fact, if you let people like Representative Ryan go to his logical extreme, you wind up with Somalia. You wind up with Haiti. Because that's the anarcho-randian wonderland where only the strong survive.
But you can at least carry a gun around, so it all evens out in that respect.
Right. So they got their Second Amendment rights.
Right.
Oh my God. One of my favorite right-wing lunatics. I was talking about her before you came on air. Marsha Blackburn was there today. What is this woman's special expertise that entitled her to be at this summit?
What's what struck me about the list that they chose? They do have some people in the Republican Party that have some background in healthcare policy, but they instead generally chose the people who are the craziest, the most right wing, the least likely to want to seriously explore common ground. So you saw from the invite list that there was no way there was going to be a serious attempt to find compromise, and that's what you saw today. You saw Democrats repeatedly trying to create openings to find common ground, and Republicans repeatedly spitting out talking points, often with no factual basis whatsoever.
Well, let me just ask you, and I don't mean this to sound hopelessly negative. Is it a fool's errand to think that Republicans are going to behave in anything like a responsible fashion where the heavy lifting issues that face this country are concerned?
Well, I'll say this, and this has not been the liberal talking point for the most part. But I would say in every issue that has come down the pike since Obama was inaugurated, there have always been at least one Republican that's willing to talk seriously. You did get three Republican votes for the stimulus. You did get eight House Republicans voting for the carbon cap and trade bill over last summer. You did have one House Republican vote for health care, Joseph Cowell. You did have one Republican senator vote for it at the committee level. And you have in the Senate now Lindsey Graham having serious talks with Kerry, Andrew Lieberman about global warming. So there's always been somebody. You could pick off at least one or two that you have a shot with. And because the middle of the country puts such a premium on bipartisanship, rightly or wrongly, I think it's a signal to certain voters, well, if you've got both parties together, it must be good. It puts the administration in a box because, as you know, 99% of Republicans have no interest in good faith negotiations. So how do you get out of that paradox? One of the two things they have to try to do, they have to sincerely try so they can at least go back to the public and say, look, we really did all we could here. And in your best case scenario, you get one or two so you can say, look, I did my best and look, I actually found a couple. So they always have to try, and the risk that those of us left have to watch out for is to make sure in their pursuit of that, they don't throw over their own principles along the way. You end up with an ineffectual bill. In the case of the stimulus, for example, it was certainly better than nothing. Unfortunately, it had to be weakened to a degree to get those extra Republican votes so they could get the damn thing passed, but you had a less effective stimulus as it could have been. So you pulled yourself back from the abyss, but you didn't put yourself on the path of a real robust recovery. That's the frustration that we're dealing with the political process right now.
But by the same token, Bill, this is not your father's political process, is it?
Well, no, back in the day, a lot of people check their party affiliations at the door and actually, negotiate things like normal adults, and with some common sense of ideological approach, some common agreement on what the basic facts were. But now you're dealing with the Republican Party that is mainly fueled by the right-wing movement that has become completely unmoored to reality and facts. They live in their own alternative universe, and you can't have a normal discussion with those folks.
Do you think that today's summit, so to speak, did it accomplish the goal of showing that the Democrats are left with no other alternative than to go it alone and do the best they can and maybe do reconciliation?
I think so. I mean, I only can base this on some anecdotal evidence because obviously it's going to take a few days before, various clips of the event are cycled through cable news over and over again and you get a sense of where people feel about it because most folks didn't watch the thing from start to finish. But when I was listening to the C-SPAN during the lunch break, and I wrote about this today at ourfuture.org, there were two Republican callers. They have the Democratic line and the Republican
line. Right.
Two Republicans called in appalled at their own party. One person said, I'm ashamed that my party cannot meet the president halfway. Second guy called in and said, this isn't the grand old party, this is the grand oppressive party. So there are even Republicans out there who finally got to see how their party is behaving. This is not how adults govern. And so the more people do see that based on what exchanges get, put in front of the public after the session is over, I think if those exchanges become known, the public's going to recognize what Obama's been dealing with, how frustrating that has been, and those skittish Democrats who've been afraid to pass something on a party line vote could say, okay, the public now understands why we're doing it this way. It's not because it's our preferred route. It's because we really have no other option if we're going to do anything on behalf of the American people.
Well, I think perhaps it's looking from my early just impression of what's coming out of this. It looks like the pull quote so far is Senator Rockefeller's quote. The health insurance industry is the shark that sits right below the water. Did that strike you, Bill, as being just a little bit surprising in light of the fact that he went ahead and came out and said he would not support reconciliation or would not support public option by reconciliation?
Right. He is supporting reconciliation.
Yes, but not the public option.
Right, he did pull back. He earlier in the process, he was very strong for the public option. Recently, he said, I don't think it makes sense to go for it right now. Everyone in the Democratic Party knows how the private insurance industry has helped create the healthcare crisis that we're in today. And most Democrats, not all, have been generally supportive of the public option. The problem has been if that support has not been uniform. There clearly were enough public option opponents in the Democratic caucus to deny it a full 60 votes in the Senate. Maybe you do have 50-plus votes that you could theoretically do it under reconciliation. And you had an attempt in this past week to get those 50 to recommit to it. But unfortunately, we only have gotten about, I think it's two dozen to recommit. So even there are some Democrats like Jay Rockefeller who have been supportive, they're very, very afraid to do it on a simple majority vote. And that's why you got almost no serious attention at the summit today. So I think it's highly unfortunate. It'd be a much better bill if it were in there. I certainly don't begrudge anybody to keep fighting for it, but it really does not look like they're going to get 50 Democrats who will agree to do it on that budget reconciliation simple majority vote procedure.
Well, given, and this may seem a simplistic question, so I apologize in advance. When you've got a majority in a body of Congress, why is a majority vote not enough?
Well, it should be, and you could certainly argue that it probably would be if you just did it. The thing that is making Democrats very paralyzed right now is that it's been so long since they've actually tried to do things, right? Anyone's tried to actually do things. And what they haven't fully grasped yet is in the course of the legislative process, when there's a lot of negotiation and little spats and squabbling, that makes the whole process look bad and it depletes voters' confidence that you know what you're doing. Even though it's just normal legislating. If there wasn't 24-hour cable TV, people might not even know all this legislating was going on. It wouldn't be such a problem. But it is right now. And what the Democrats have not fully grasped is you're not going to solve that problem until you actually pass it. And you can go to the public and say, look, here's what we actually agreed upon, and here is how it is going to help you. And that's when the poll numbers will change. But it requires a certain leap of faith to take that leap, and it's taking all of the president's persuasive powers just to get him to pass something, and it doesn't look like they're willing to take that leap for something as bold as the public option. Unfortunately, I would certainly argue that if they did it, the polls of the public option has always been strong. If they did that, they'd be fine. What they're probably afraid of is, right now, the insurance lobby has been fairly quiet. They're not trying to destroy this bill the way they tried to destroy Bill Clinton's insurance reform in the early 90s. They're afraid if they went with the public option that the insurance lobby would dump all of their millions, go into their districts, go into their states, distort what's in the bill, and really threaten their election prospects. That's what they're afraid of. They're afraid they can't stand up to that. So you can show all the poll numbers you want and say, look at the beating public option stake, and it's still popular. They're afraid those poll numbers won't stay if the insurance lobby really unloads their pocketbooks on them.
And if we consider the import of the Citizens United case that recently was handed down in a nightmarish decision by the Supreme Court, that factors that ratchets the betting up a notch, doesn't it, Bill, in terms of what the insurance industry really could do to individual members of Congress in terms
Absolutely.
Of campaign money?
Absolutely. Now you could look at it and say, well, if the insurance lobby likes it, it must be a terrible bill and we should oppose it too. I would not make that argument. It's certainly going to make insurance companies relatively happy that there's going to be an individual mandate that will require people to buy their product. They like that. I will take that deal in exchange for all the other reforms we're going to get, ensuring that we're going to have 30 million more people covered. We're going to have reforms that are going to reduce premiums for people so it'll be more affordable. There's going to be subsidies to help people buy that insurance. Would I prefer a public option? Absolutely. Would that be a better way to reduce cost? Absolutely. But in lieu of that, I'm going to take that half a loaf because we've such an advancement to have near universal coverage across the country, and we can keep pushing for the public option from that point forward, especially if the costs don't come down as much as we argued they would with the public option. We'll have the opportunity to say, you see, we told you it'd be better that way. Let's add this on to the reforms that have already been done.
But coming out of this summit, Bill, there isn't time to retool what's already been passed. If there is any substantive change to be done out of this summit today, is that just conference committee work procedurally?
It's probably going to happen. And I don't think all the T's have been crossed yet. But what's probably going to happen is they're going to take the bill that passed the Senate, and the House will pass it as is. That way it doesn't have to go back to the Senate for another 60-vote. The president signs that into law, then you can go the budget reconciliation route for changes to the bill that pertain to the budget, compromises that, for the most part, make the Senate bill better than where it currently is. And then that can pass through both the House and the Senate on a straight, simple majority vote. That will require the least amount of extra legwork and not require any more supermajority votes in the Senate.
So in consideration of the electoral issues that swirl around all of this, is this, given the rising primary season and so forth, is this something, in your opinion, that is done better sooner than later? Does it become less likely the more time passes?
I mean, where they're at right now is a bill that they could have passed. You know, it's like Israel-Palestine. You know where the compromise is. And you're spinning your wheels for 50 years waiting for someone to see the light. They were very close to this sort of deal back in the summer, but the inability to herd cats, to get Democrats to take the leap and actually cast the vote, is such a frustrating process. And when they don't act on that, they push everything else in the legislative calendar down the queue, whether it's jobs or global warming, financial reform, et cetera. You don't have a lot of window. You don't have a lot of space to actually get stuff done in a presidential term. You know, we're already into year two before you know it. So the thing I think is going to make sure this health care bill does get passed is even those Democrats that are afraid of the political ramifications, they've already taken the vote. They've already voted for some version of this. They've already got the political baggage for it. So they're going to have the political baggage. You might as well actually enact it. So some of those reforms will be in place, and you can point to them in your reelection campaign, and you can get it off the agenda and start moving on those other items so they can get some other stuff done. I think most Democrats get that now, and I'm hopeful that means we'll get it passed sooner than later. But the budget reconciliation process is not a lickety-split process. It's going to take a little bit to sift through all those parliamentary procedures, and so the faster they get moving on it, the better off they'll be.
So, let me back up for just a minute then. Depending on what ultimately comes out, for instance, I'm very fond of Bernie Sanders' position on the medical centers in basically what can be described as down and out areas of the country. I'm very much in favor of the Medicare buy-in that will, if I understand it correctly, will eliminate a lot of the asset testing that has kept a whole bunch of people out of Medicaid in the first place. By the same token, however, Bill, if you look back, for instance, at the credit card bill that was passed, and we find out that there's in the interim between signing the bill and the activation of the law, the credit card companies have come up with a whole slew of brand new ways to screw consumers. Is that risk also present within the healthcare legislation that what will wind up happening is the insurance companies, for instance, if pre-existing conditions are taken away from them, that they will then in turn just create some other stratagem, some other mechanism by which they can price pre-existing condition patients out of the, or consumers out of the market?
Well, there's always a concern. One of the reasons why people fought for the public option so strongly is you can pass the regulations you want, but a lot of corporations are very adept at wriggling out of regulations. And so you need to have some way to enforce that a public option was a way to enforce by being able to say to folks, if you don't like what the private insurers are doing, you got another choice here. So those risks are always present in any kind of reform situation. One thing that Jay Rockefeller said that made a lot of sense to me was, look, once this gets passed, you know, if we don't pass health care, like we didn't pass it in the 90s, we're not going to touch the subject for 15 years again. But once you do pass it, we're going to be revisiting and improving and tweaking and reforming every year. We're going to see how this works. All the theories will be tested. Some things will work better than expected. Some things will probably work worse than expected. And we'll keep at it every single year and get it better and better and better. So I think the concern is well placed, but let's all remember this is not the end of the line of the reform process, especially if this notions of progressive government continue to take hold in the populace. If conservatives sweep everybody out in 2010 or 2012, then we got a much more serious problem. But if people realize, these guys in charge are working on problems diligently and doing the best they can, let's give them some more time to tweak and refine stuff, we'll have the ability to make those reforms and fix any problems that arise.
We know from the Harvard study, Bill, that 45,000 Americans, friends, loved ones, relatives, neighbors, die every year, not from disease or from lack of access to medical treatment, but from the fact that they do not have coverage. With that in mind, does what we anticipate, if it is passed, does it begin to pull that number? And what a horrifying and sad number that is. Does that begin to address that and pull that number back?
Well, and that to me is, the ultimate bottom line with this compromise proposal. And it is a compromise. It's not everything that progressives want. It's not as strong a bill as it could be. But if you're going to expand coverage to 30 million plus people, you're going to save lives, period. People's lives will be saved if you pass the bill. And whatever problems that we see in it, we can address those as they come along. But you can't take away the chance of having someone's lives saved with the promise and the pledge. I mean, what these bills would do, they would have an individual mandate. People would be legally obliged, with the exception of people in certain hardship, to buy insurance. And that's going to mean that most people will have coverage. And we have a system of shared responsibility in the country as it comes to health care. That's a big, big, big deal. And I don't think we can walk away from that.
How do you think President Obama graded out today? Dealing with the Republican bozos that were, as you so well documented, in the room. How did he stand up, like on a scale of 1 to 10? In terms of being presidential and leaderly and frankly inspiring, because at the end of the day, the American people have to be inspired, as silly as that may sound. How did he do?
Yeah, I'd give him probably a 7 today. I don't think it was quite as strong a performance as it was when he went up to Baltimore to the House Republican retreat and really showed those guys up. I almost think he intentionally held himself back a little bit and didn't want to wipe the floor up with everybody because he wanted to be seen as, look, I'm really trying to work with these guys. I'm not trying to lure them into my trap and embarrass them. So he didn't quite have, I think, a number of really memorable exchanges that could crystallize how obstructionist they were being. But having said that, I still think on the whole, you saw a president who clearly understood the issue, clearly had no radical designs of mass governmental takeover, had a sincere interest in making sure that people had coverage and had reduced costs, and very ably, all the scare tactics that the right wing puts out there always fall flat once you see the president himself talk about these things. The caricature and the reality never match. So I think in that respect, he always comes off well in these sorts of settings, and you've yet to see conservatives really be able to show they have a better approach or any kind of serious idea on how you expand coverage to 30 million plus people and reduce costs at the same time.
Do you feel like he, the particular exchange with Eric Cantor, where he said, we could make food and drugs cheaper, but we don't want to kill people. Do you think that he got enough pushback against them to let the American people I don't know. Did we actually get a spotlight on the right wing's big red rubber noses?
Well, the thing that Obama understands well, and that the conservatives don't, is, you know, the American people have a certain ideological conflict within themselves. People generally want their government to do things. They want to protect them from unsafe products. They want them to fight poverty. They want them to make sure we have clean energy, and they want them to make sure that we have health insurance. Poll after poll after poll says that. But at the same time, there's often a skepticism that the government will do it well. They might want it in theory, and then they might pull back in practice. So the thing that the Democrats have been hurting themselves with in having this protracted legislative process with all the squabbling, it looks incompetent. And it makes people feel like, I don't know if you have your act together and will actually pass a functional bill. But when you see the president have an exchange like that with Eric Cantor, and Eric Cantor only giving, you know, a crude, simplistic vision of what government can do, which is nothing, and the president offering a more well-rounded response, I think that's reassuring to people. You know what? That guy actually knows what government can and can't do well, and I think he's got his finger on the pulse. I think it's very helpful for the overall cause.
Well, Bill, I really appreciate the time that you spent with us this evening. I was informed as we were setting up our conversation that you've got fatherly duties to attend to, and a little one to get to bed. So I understand bedtime's about 7 where you are.
It is.
I really appreciate the time you spent with us, and I thank you for the skull sweat and the energy that you put into bringing these things to light. My colleague and I, Guy James, will be at America's Future Now in June, and I hope we get to sit down for a little bit and have another on-air conversation to talk about the fact that America does have health care now when we get there in June.
I hope that'll be the case, too, and I'm a Guy James fan. Love to see you both.
All right. Take care, Bill, and I hope to talk with you soon. And, again, thanks. Thanks very much.
Take care.
Bye now. From the Campaign for America's Future, that is Bill Scheer. He is the online editor for Campaign for America's Future and a blogger as well. He is also has his own blog over at liberaloasis.com, author of Wait, Don't Move to Canada, A Stay and Fight Strategy to Win Back America. I think it'll be fun to talk with him when we get back to D.C. In June. So if you want to chime in and opine on your thoughts from the healthcare summit today, you are certainly more than welcome to do so. There is also, however, a bunch of other stuff to get after. It's about 18 minutes before the hour, and, well, let's go ahead and go to the phones. You know the number, right? You do. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. Do feel free to chime right in, or if you can't get to a phone, you can always email at Bob Kincaid, BobKincaid, @gmail.com, and let's see who we got. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Brian from New Hampshire.
Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hi, God love Bill Scheer there. I've been logging on to Liberal Oasis going back to at least 1998, 99, back when I saw the seriousness of yet another corporatist fascist oncoming named George W. Bush, and why people wouldn't own up to his total unqualification for president, to be the president of this nation, which I would not put that on Barack Obama. It's a polar opposite of there with Barack Obama. But Bill Scheer, he's a truly thinking man, a compassionate man, a liberal man in the classical sense and in the progressive sense, but I think we're all being played on this so-called healthcare reform. If it doesn't have the public option, we are being played like the worst level of on the worst scale. They're going to make profits to no end. The corporation, the healthcare industry, quote unquote, is going to make such profits profiteering out of this that you won't believe it. And I agree with you, but I think it's far more than 45,000 people that die each year. That I think it's at least double that die each year, Americans that die because they don't have adequate health care coverage or they pre-existing conditions.
Well, and right, Brian, and even the
for the care.
Yeah, even the Harvard study, peer-reviewed study. You know, this isn't, you know, they didn't get it out of the gumball machine.
No.
It was a peer-reviewed study, and the study itself says that number is a conservative number.
Yeah.
So it may very well be that the case is, as you have said, that the number is much, much higher.
And the fact is, even Bill, they've got this mass media, this corporatist mass media, has got even Bill Scheer. Rhetoric and the words do matter. That's about the only thing I agree with Rush Limbaugh on when he said that 15 years ago or so. The fact is, even Bill Scheer is saying, of course, he's coming out, he's saying, of course, I would want the public option to go through there. I would want that to be a part of a real health care reform. And then he goes on from there, he talks about Barack Obama as being, well, he's not a radical, words to that effect, Bill said, that he's not in favor of mass government takeover of health care costs. But the fact is, that's a public option is going to eventually, logically, when people see that it's not the profiteers and not in the way of their actual health care with their physician, with their nurses, with the actual caregivers, when they see that public option actually working to the betterment and the cost going down further and further and further, where it's more like England's or Canada's or the Scandinavian nation's health care system, when they realize that, it will become massive government takeover of healthcare cost without taking over the healthcare itself, without having gatekeepers and those kind of things. You have to have the public option. These mandates, and they've got Bill even on that too, they're talking about the shared responsibility. Of course, in private insurance, yeah, we all pay in. And the private insurance industry, they love when they jack up costs for people for car insurance, health insurance, et cetera. They'll try to make a story out of some person there where they've got an illegitimate, a claim that's not enough evidence for it, or it's based on paltry, it's a shoddy claim, or it's a frivolous claim. Yeah, they'll try to focus all the so-called news on that or that kind of to take the attention of the American people there, the consumers, off of the insurance industry overcharging for just about everything the insurance industry or everything the insurance industry is involved in. And I believe in private insurance, you got to have it for home insurance and car insurance. But I believe the Constitution, it lays out that eventually that's what even the founding fathers wanted, that health care was and is a right for human beings. It's far, you got to keep breathing in to breathe out again, and you got to have the right clean air and clean and preventative health care especially is of course preferable to have a quality of life and the life, liberty, and happiness that they speak of. I go back to, I don't agree with him on everything, and he was an employee of the British East India Tea Company, but John Stuart Mill, a utilitarian type of philosopher and a political philosopher.
The father of utilitarianism.
Yeah, really. The fact is that, you can take that too far, too, and then it becomes not just that Epicureanism, but it becomes a libertarianism or just a nihilism, which is everything, how much joy can I get out of it? How much, happiness can I get out of this or that event or experience, and to heck with everybody else, whether they're victimized by it or not. That you can take that too far, but what Stuart Mill, I think what he was trying to say was that it has like the Epicureans of the Roman period there, and the pre-Roman and the Greek period, there's a balance to it. There's the absolute balance to it. It's not gone too far, like Henry David Thoreau with his asceticism, he didn't force it on everybody else. He just went off to Walden Pond and lives a simple life. And he didn't, like the monasticism, the monastic movement there. I think liberals have to get into a monastic movement.
Well, let me ask you a question.
Nuts.
Let me ask you a question, Brian, okay. and this is the hard one. I mean, this is not a, it's no joke.
Right. I understand.
If we can't get a public option, and in my world,
I'm one of these damn liberals, Bob. I'm still going to go along with it, even if it means it's going to be for too many people over time. It's going to eventually mean a mandate for coverage for young, healthy people who have to pay high, huge premiums, even when they're young, healthy citizens. You know, when formerly they didn't have any health care. You know, you could argue they should have. They should have had it covered by the government, or just, you know, and just as their right. As young citizens of this nation, the fact is that over time, I think it's going to be a disaster, the so-called health care reform without a public option. But I know what you're saying. I'm still one of these damn liberals. I'm hoping for some kind of reform that if it can cut down the 45,000 or 90,000, whatever lives that are lost each year because of lack of proper health care, if it can cut it down by 10,000 a year or 50,000 a year, whatever, of course, I want to try to do it.
And the other side of that is the Medicaid issue. If we open, you know, there's a bunch of those people. There's a bunch of people who will be covered because they are eligible for Medicaid, and that's not mandatory purchase.
But the fact is, Bob, that those people are going to be covered. They have to right now under a Democratic Congress and a Democratic president that. They will have the people at the lowest economic end of the income scale, the absolute lowest and below poverty and all that, that those people are right now, there'll be safety laws and enactments put in there. But another G.W. Bush type of president comes into office, those things will be thrown right out like nothing, like the trash out of the back door of a restaurant. That's what they think of us, you know, of the poorest people of this nation there. That's what they think. And people on Medicaid, they got to pay. I know I got to pay $230 a month Medicaid spend down amount is what it is to get any kind of Medicaid coverage for health care. And it's really, you know, it just that I have to meet that amount or else there's nothing. And even there, it's very limited coverage.
Right. And that's one of the things that happens.
It's not a free ride at all.
Well, no, it's not. But one of the most important things that happens inside the Medicaid reform that comes with this. If it comes out of committee this way, is that state asset testing for Medicaid is eliminated.
Okay, that's good, but I could see that that could all change if some kind of the Republican movement continues, that they could continue to take back the seat.
Absolutely. Yeah. But by the same token, doesn't that merely impose a greater duty on us, Brian, to make sure that never happens?
But like, of course it does, but as much as we can do in this corporatist media driven world there, where it's, you know, it's just the thinking media, you know, the Bob Kincaids, the Jeff Farias, and the rest of the liberal, you know, the progressive media, the Mike Malloy, that those are not given nearly a large enough microphone where they are reflective, especially on something like this healthcare issue. They are you and Mike and Jeff and just so many progressives out there. Peter B. Collins, God love him. They're reflective of what the people want in terms of a public option, and in terms of that gets back to the leadership. It's not just the Congress; it's Barack Obama too. That this change you can believe in, president, that he started back in early 2008 in the primary season there, at just everywhere. I just saw change you can believe in, and just it was supposed to be all new direction, and healthcare was supposed to be one of those things where it would just be innate, that just part of Barack Obama's supposed platform for healthcare reform implicitly was going to include a public option at the very least. But it's just the things have gotten so, diluted in the national media, Bob, that I just think it's going to come down to this reform is going to be, it could end up taking more lives over the time. It could be end up killing more Americans, and that they have such a death grip. That's the proper, I guess, metaphor to use too. With that death grip on the national media, these insurance companies could get away with it too, with this phony kind of reform, and that we will all be further mandated to these bastards, and they're overcharging. They won't be mandated to have to cover people's health care, especially under a Republican regime. And to think that, with given the state of the media, I can't imagine anyone that thinks that the Republicans, they're not on the, they may well, it's possible they'll take back the Congress in 2010, this year. This is not the time to be hitting them with this type of, you know, we're reaching out to, you know, with friendliness to like Neville Chamberlain to Adolf Hitler in Munich, 1938. That's the kind of people we are dealing with. That's the kind, these people are profiteer. Bob Kincaid, your great Scottish ancestry, your Scotch-Irish ancestry, and people, you know, they have up here, they have the Highland Games up here in parts of Massachusetts. And
yeah, I've read about Scottish, that. Yeah,
with a big, I'm a little Celtic leprechaun like me, Brian. I couldn't probably do all that stuff with the big logs and the
yeah, that's what I go in for, a little log throwing on a leisurely.
Yeah, I can do that every morning. I'm sorry, okay. But no, that's the thing too. They are so plastic. They are not part of the biodegradable, real human experience. People like Glenn Beck and the right wing and the Washington insiders on the media. They don't. Their world doesn't really exist in the real America. There was so many more homeless people all over, foreclosed millions of Americans. How are they going to meet this insurance mandate if they don't have a job or income in the first place? You know, there's so much more to it, but talking about your ancestry, it's part of mine too. The Scotch-Irish and all that, they play those Highland games, or they maybe have a few, like the close family member, a little too much Guinness stout or something, then you know, get into a fracas or a fist fight or something. But their violence is not, it's not their showy viciousness like a George W. Bush, where their violent ways take the entire country into wars that we did not need to be in, and that allows the September 11th attacks and the profiteers to profit in with these wars without end, where we haven't gotten the official story of September 11th or next to anything, and where all they're doing is making more and more people that hate us more and more with the tortures of Abu Ghraib and Guantanamo, etc. That's what created the suicide bombers that killed off tens of thousands of Iraqis and thousands of our own servicemen in Iraq, and these lying SOBs get away with saying they're making us safer by torturing and waterboarding people. That Dick Cheney is he belongs in front of The Hague, and instead of, you know, give him that medical care there. But the Dutch people have a great socialized medical system, and they could take care of his heart very well, and while he stood trial there for war crimes. But the fact is that, you know, Bob, the people, you got to stand up to these. Barack Obama should have gone in there with, you know, you guys have got to deal with us. Look at what the election results that put me into office were. The public option was part of the driving force that put me into office. And you people, you Republicans, have got to face up to that. You got to deal with it. You got to live with it. It's not going to be like Social Security where or Medicare where you're either stealing from those annual surpluses for Social Security American workers. That's the worst case of taxation without representation in American history. Or you're overcharging the American taxpayers on Medicare, the phony drug coverage where it's unregulated, where it has to be, if it's really Medicare, it's going to be like the Veterans Administration coverage there on drugs and that kind of, it's going to be properly regulated. You're still going to make a handsome profit, but you're not going to price gouge people who are sick and really need that medication or that care. And you're not going to price gouge the American taxpayer on such things, but he doesn't stand up to them in that way. This change you can believe in, President. He just seemed to have disappeared from January 21st, 2009 onward, Bob. I agree. All I can do at this point is pray that it will be, you know, some kind of reform that will save some of those lives. But I agree with you that in that very conservative estimate of how many people die every year for want of decent.
And you know, my only hope, Brian, is that if we can get this passed, that there are a bunch of us, hopefully millions of us, prepared to begin on the very day, the instant that the ink dries.
Keep fighting to put more progressives into the.
Well, no, keep the pressure up for a public option. Keep the pressure up for single payer.
But like I said, if we only react to the national corporatist news media, we may be going on down this dark road where we're continuing to have the people like you're just talking about, or maybe it was your podcast show I was hearing there, Bob, the Michelle Bachmann and the people there, or no, that was today, I guess, where they met with Barack Obama and that other lady there. there, and you know, and Mr. Boehner and all that are thought of as great conservative opinion leaders or thinkers, where, you know, William F. Buckley must be rolling in his grave, for God's sake.
Ain't that the truth?
I disagree with so much of that man. He actually critically thought things through. And, you know, there's somebody like George Will today tries to do that, but he, too often, he's still a party hack, and he backs down. He backed down for 8 years.
Well, and he's wrong, more than he's right. And I'm not talking about wrong opinion. He's factually wrong. He gets
George
stuff.
George Will backed down for 8 full years against the Napoleonic leader, George W. Bush.
Right. But all of a sudden, you know, George Will, well, it's time to get out of Afghanistan. Well, yeah, it is time to get out of Afghanistan. It was time to get out of Afghanistan before we got into Afghanistan, George, but you loved it for 8 years.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the same thing with these teabaggers. You know, where the hell were they for the last 8 years, Brian? You know what I mean? They get out there and they...
Together, sheeple and teabaggers are the same people to me. They're just, they don't want to stand up to the real powers that be in this nation. And that's, you know, that's why I mostly ignore them. They don't, but you can ignore people like that at your own peril too, as shown by what happened with the, it should only be negative attention to that bomber, the guy that flew the plane into the IRS building, got, you know, he killed the 68-year-old Vietnam veteran there, Gollum. That the people, you know, even for a national sales tax or a national flat tax, I disagree with those. The regressive and the corporations are salivating those kind of things there, that kind of a tax system. That even at that sort of a taxation system, you need something like an Internal Revenue Service to, organize the money, and like a taxonomic organization of what's coming in and properly and without, you know, it's not like a George W. Bush family. You're not allowed to, what's the term for when you steal government money? You set yourself off as a, it's something. You know what it is, Bob. You're Christianity, I guess it would be blaspheming or something like that. It would be a phony. But you're not taking your governmental duties. You're stealing the money. Somebody will call and they know what the term is. I'm sorry. I needed just maybe another 45 milligrams of caffeine. I would have known that. Like my Immanuel Kant was a guy, the philosopher, the Kantian ideas of peaceful, and he was a Prussian lad. You talk about your strongly, your Germanic or whatever, and the Scottish ancestors and the fierce people there. He was from the Prussian. He was born and raised 80 years, really. He lived 1724, 1804 in Prussia, which is, I would say, in modern Europe especially, it's the most militaristic region of Europe. And yet he was the most peaceful man that Western philosophy has ever produced, and he was a great influence on people like Martin Luther King and the Kennedy brothers and people well beyond there. That Deepak Chopra today, you know, the fact is he drank 50 cups of coffee a day, though. He was only 5'2", too. Where did he put it? Oh, embezzling is the term, Bob.
Okay.
That's what the Bush family has done, did for 8 full years with the so-called government money coming in. They embezzled.
See, the only thing I could come up with was looting.
Yeah, looting, too. Private war profiteers and health industry profiteers, human misery profiteers. But I agree with you. If they could just stand up some more than this, I want to keep a good thought and just say that hopefully that even without a public option, that there can be some good, some lives saved and some quality of life for some millions of Americans hopefully improved by this reform. You know, I'm not hopeful about it, but I wouldn't vote against it. I wouldn't tell them, you know, I've been goading my own representatives and senator for the public option. But, they have 23 senators so far. They're all Democrats, right?
Well, Bernie Sanders, I mean.
Yeah, I know he's a guy. But that's what, now there's a real public servant. That's the polar opposite of embezzling and looting. Put up a picture of Bernie Sanders. that's what that is. He's a good man. But the fact is, I want to keep a good thought. And like I said, I haven't seen the actual printout of the health care reform bill as they're what they're trying to final, supposedly trying to finalize now. So I can't really, it's like trying to comment on, you know, somebody rewriting the Bible or something, or their own Bible, or until they really have it down verbatim and printed out in the Gutenberg tradition, we don't know, but I understand, but it was great to hear Bill share. You should have him on every week.
Well, you know, that's,
but yeah. Liberal Oasis is
it's a brilliant site. It's been there for a heck of a long time too.
Seems like the Drudge Retort has gotten more, not teabaggers, but, maybe Free Republic or more right wing type of, posters and contributors, but it's still pretty much it's a good free speech area, and there's good links to from the Drudge Retort to Liberal Oasis. I usually go there first, it's not a cartoon like the Drudge Report.
Exactly. Well, Brian, have yourself a good night, and go get that extra 50 milligrams of caffeine.
Okay, good night.
All right, take care.
God bless you.
You too. Bye now, Brian.
Bye-bye.
Later.
Bye.
Calling from New Hampshire, that's our buddy Brian, and we roll along. Doggone it. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin from Brooklyn.
Oh, hey, Kevin, what's up?
Soon to be heading out to Ansan, South Korea.
And do we have our flight reserved and our boarding pass?
Yeah, March 8th. I would have been flying out yesterday, but my apartment isn't ready, so I've been delayed a week. But I would have been just landing right now had things gone according to schedule. But, you know, I have another week to practice my Korean and, you know, gather intelligence.
But as someone who's going to be teaching English over there, they don't necessarily want you to be that fluent. It's not necessary that you be that fluent in Korean, is it?
Probably not, but, you know, my thing is also, it's just for day-to-day survival.
Right.
You know, and just my own peace of mind, because when I've always been taught, you know, whenever you visit a country that doesn't speak English, try and learn as much of the language as fast as you can. You know, just dealing with day-to-day in a non-work capacity, you get better treatment because it shows respect. It shows respect for the culture that you're trying to learn the language.
Oh, absolutely. Without a doubt, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know. But back to our own twisted culture, which I'm going to have to deal with for, I guess, another 10 days. that fiasco, you know, I could only stomach like 5-minute intervals of the healthcare summit today. And like you said, it was just some of the most asinine comments I've ever heard of in my life. You know?
Yeah, without a I don't know, asinine, yeah, clownish, certainly, what's his name, Punkin' Face, Boner, John Boner said, you know, let's crash the party. That clueless clown doesn't realize that when you've got an invite to the party, it's kind of hard to crash it.
Yeah.
You know, crashing parties is for people who were distinctly not invited to participate. But, you know, Bill Scherer was absolutely right, Kevin. They got some policy people. They've got some folks who could actually contribute to the dialogue. Did John Boner and Mitch McConnell send them? Oh, hell no.
No.
They sent the loonies. They sent the clown car.
Yeah.
You know, when Marsha Blackburn gets out, you know that it's over.
Oh yeah. It's like she's like an old Michelle Bachmann. I don't know who's more insane, her or Bachmann.
Well, they're in constant competition. I think Michelle Bachmann's probably got a little bit of a lead, but let's not leave out some of the other loonies. Because there were some real winners in the process along the way. I'm trying to find the guy's name, right quick. Bill Scherer mentioned him. There he is. They sent Representative Joe Barton from Texas.
Oh God!
And granted, it's not necessarily health care, but it is still an a strong indicator of the quality of person that they sent, Joe Barton said the following, talking about greenhouse gas emissions. Okay, Kevin? I would also point out that CO2, carbon dioxide, is not a pollutant in any normal definition of the term. I'm creating it as I talk to you. It's in your Coca-Cola, your Dr. Pepper, your Perrier water. You can't regulate God. That's what they sent to the healthcare summit.
You know.
They sent Senator Tom Coburn from Oklahoma. And as Bill Scheer pointed out, Tom Coburn is famous for this statement. Lesbianism is so rampant in some of the schools in southeast Oklahoma that they'll only let one girl go to the bathroom. Really? I mean, do they pick a number at the beginning of the day and only one girl gets to go to the bathroom all day long? Really? Is that what he was saying? These people are lunatics, Kevin. They're not home. The elevator don't go all the way to the top. Loaf, you know, two or three slices shy of a loaf.
Yeah, but first of all, what does that have to do with health care?
Well, it doesn't, but these are just exemplars of their general right-wing lunacy. Those things weren't said today, but they are emblematic of the quality, if you will, of those that the Republican Party sent to the summit. And they did so specifically, Kevin, because they did not want to engage in a substantive debate of the health care crisis in this country. Because for them, Kevin, there is no health care crisis in America. They're happy with things the way they are. After all, the Representative Marsha Blackburn, talking about the natural disasters and so forth, said, well, we're not going to cry emergency every time we have a Katrina. Lunatics, because the point, how can I put this? The people who were selected to attend the healthcare summit today by the GOP, Kevin, were the people who passed or came nearest passing the teabagger purity test. Because that's what the Republican side of this was. It was a play to, what did Shakespeare call them? The groundlings. The people who could only appreciate gross comedy of broad gestures, slapstick, who didn't get the comedy or the seriousness of well-crafted dialogue or good acting. They could only appreciate a pratfall.
You know what? I wish Barack Obama had a real evil streak in him.
Toward what end?
Uh-huh. You know what he should have done? Just play on loudspeaker. Don't sit there. Don't say a word. And play on loudspeaker The Post-American World by Fareed Zakaria. If you ever read that book.
Yeah, I've read excerpts of it. I know what you're talking about.
It would have driven them and locked the doors so they couldn't leave.
Well, you know, there's an old trick that judges will use when they call a status conference or a settlement conference, actually. Yeah. And the judge doesn't want to try the case, and he wants the two sides to settle. He'll bring them into chambers, and he'll close the door, and there'll be a big pot of coffee there and some bottles of water.
Mm-hmm.
And the two lawyers will start drinking the coffee and the bottled water or whatever. Pretty soon, pardon me, Your Honor, I'm going to have to excuse myself to go to the facility. No, I'm sorry, Counselor, you're not. You're here to settle the case. Now you just drink up.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I really wish he would have done that, because it would have had some of them self-destruct. Because the reality is, and again, it goes back to, you know, the reason why they don't want health care and trying to cut, this country is becoming more. The demographics of this country has changed.
You know, if by demographics you mean color? Yeah, it sure is.
And it's scaring the bejesus out of it. I think the rationale behind most of the teabaggers is, you see, you have to understand, Barack Obama's mother's side of the family
Yeah.
fit that demographic.
Yeah, except for, you know, her being an atheist and everything. You know, in an unintentional slip of the tongue there, you may have just come up with what the real problem is for the teabaggers.
Exactly.
He's Barack's brother.
Exactly. And the reality is, a lot of these, especially men, fear that their daughter is going to go off to college and get impregnated by a black guy or something.
Well, do you realize how if you could have just tapped into, you know, with the alien mind reading ray or whatever, if you could have just tapped into the internal monologue of the Cantors and the Boners and the Bartons, all you would have heard was screaming at the fact that they were sitting there taking orders from and only being allowed to speak when spoken to by a black man.
Oh, yeah. And you can see, and Boner has a look like he's about to kill. If he had a gun, he would use it.
But that's, you know, that's the typical teabagger thing.
Yeah.
They're all that way.
You know, I don't get Cantor. Well, I know he's a self-hating, self-loathing Jewish man.
I don't know. You know, I think I learned all I needed to know about Eric Cantor when he bugged out of serious legislative business to run off to a Britney Spears concert.
Oh, God.
That's everything I ever needed to know about him.
Yeah. But, you know, they're twisted. You know, you have Boner, who probably spent a fortune in tanning salons. You know, it's kind of like, it's a very twisted mindset. Because I know in his district in Ohio, it's one of the most racist districts in the country.
Wouldn't surprise me a bit.
Because he comes from, like, that southern Ohio, which is basically the South.
Well, yeah, I've been told by a couple of Ohioans when I mentioned something about Cincinnati. Oh, that's Cincinnati. That's not Ohio. Guy James said that. It's not really Ohio. That's Cincinnati. You know, different animals. It probably ought to be part of Kentucky if it wasn't for the river.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm not surprised. But it's just, I don't know, man. It's like Barack Obama should have really done that. Just locked him in the room and fill up the place with water and coffee and have them piss on themselves and play that audio book. Because the reality of this is going to be the reality of the world. And, you know, the reality is, okay, Barack Obama may be your only hope to ensure your survival, whether you want to admit it or not.
Well, there's a symbiosis involved. A tick requires some flesh out of which to suck blood. And that's what the GOP is on Barack Obama. Frankly, they would do it with any Democrat, but the color of Barack Obama's skin has allowed the right wing to tap into a vile and hateful place and make money off of it in ways that you and I are both ashamed and astonished to contemplate.
Exactly. And it's just, you know, well, I'm not ashamed because I knew this was America, you know, before he even ran. Okay, when I did my Mid-American venture, you know, I saw the look on the face. You know, you can see right through the face. They may not say it because they're too cowardly, but you can see the look. You know the look. You know, and that's the thing. You know the look, and it's just what we would call in New York player hating. You know, don't hate the player, hate the game.
Indeed, indeed.
You know, and Barack Obama beat you at the game you invented, which you set the rules up to. He beat you at your own game. And it always comes down, and it's amazing how it always comes down, and that's the worst thing I think the reality is a person of color can do to people who have this mindset is beat them at the game they invented. You know, and if you look at the history, you know, like, you remember almost 20 years ago when it was Japan bashing?
Sure.
announced Asian bass, you know, and before that it was Middle Eastern bashing in the 70s during the oil crisis. And then, you know, now it's Chinese and Middle Eastern bashing. You know, how many people are you going to bash when you really got to look at the source of the problem, which is the person staring back at you in the mirror?
Yeah, it makes it a little, cognitive dissonance?
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, we've got to run on to the top. Well, what would have been the top of the hour, but the green news is coming up. Kevin, if we don't hear from you before you get there, make sure you send an email as soon as you're hooked up to something and say, you know, arrived alive. Enjoying large bowl of kimchi now.
Oh yes, I will, and also you'll probably be hearing from me before I go once or twice.
Okay,
I have another week here. Okay, so you know, but. I look forward, man. I look forward, and I will be sending you stuff when I get settled.
All right, you take care, Kevin.
Okay, bro.
Bye now. At present of Brooklyn and soon to be of South Korea, that's our buddy Kevin. It is about 20 minutes past the hour, and just to give you a sense for where we're going, what's out there, there's a Supreme Court decision that is terribly, terribly troubling. I don't know if you've ever been to a day-old bread store, you know, where the stuff that didn't sell goes, but it's still good enough to sell. Right. I don't know if you've ever been to one of those, but apparently a significant constitutional right has gone onto the shelf next to the stale honey buns. Yeah, really, not kidding. Science in South Dakota. Science in South Dakota is on the way. Right-wing paranoia over nothing more complex than a logo. And puppets. Puppets. You only thought Jerry Falwell and his puppet bigotry was gone. By the way, a little advice for Kevin. Marty saying, do not wear an Apollo Ono t-shirt in South Korea. Inside joke? Not sure. That might have to be... explain to me. Let's see. Don't give up on the chat room if you've been trying to get in there. It's working pretty good. Hop right in if you want to. Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom or shoot me an email and tell me if you weren't able to get in. Let me know, and we will make every effort to see that you can. So look at us. This is two nights in a row where the show just absolutely zips by. It's kind of mind-boggling the way that happens, but it does. We are almost to the halfway point of the program on this Thursday evening version of the Horn. I'm Bob. And we will be right back. Your calls, and on the way, the Green News Report with Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. It's something that makes me always look forward to Thursday. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
Change. An August summer night, soldiers passing by, listening to the wind of change. Did you ever think? so close, like brothers. The future's in the air, can feel it everywhere. I'm blowing with the wind of change.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Thursday, February 25, 2010.
Great white sharks getting scarce. No nukes for Vermont. End of the line for Hummer. Plus, James Inhofe's war on science.
I know the distinguished senator from Vermont wants so badly to believe that the science is settled and that anthropogenic gases cause global warming, and the science is not settled.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
We don't want to evolve.
No fear of that happening, Glenn Beck. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by Velvet Revolution's Disbar Torture Lawyers campaign. The DOJ Inspector General has now found Bush's DOJ attorneys committed professional misconduct in approving torture and other war crimes. But the DOJ refuses to refer the findings to state bar associations, so VR will. Please sign on and support this important campaign for accountability at disbartorturelawyers.com. That's disbartorturelawyers.com. Your support is needed. All right, Desi, well, happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much.
How old are you today?
Oh, very funny.
You're not going to say?
Not going to say.
See, our emailers are right. You have something to hide. You're keeping secrets. Okay. What do you have for us today, birthday girl?
New field data indicates great white sharks are in more trouble than previously thought and could even number fewer than endangered tigers. Great whites are rare, but were not thought to be endangered because they're spotted around the world. Researchers tagged and tracked great white sharks by satellite and were shocked to discover that because great whites travel great distances, it was the same sharks being counted over and over again.
Really?
Yes. They estimate that there could be fewer than 3,000 great white sharks left in the world. It's the end of the line for Hummer. Beleaguered automaker General...
Thank God. Really?
Yes, beleaguered automaker General Motors will shut down its Hummer line after failing to find a buyer. According to the New York Times, a Chinese car company was in talks to buy the gas guzzler, but the deal fell through after failing to win approval from the Chinese government, in part because the Chinese government's new focus on reducing dependence on foreign oil and pollution. GM bought the Hummer line in 1999, and now it can be had for the low, low price of $150 million. The Vermont State Senate has voted to retire Vermont's only nuclear power plant, refusing to extend the plant's operating license after revelations that Entergy, the utility giant that owns the plant, misled the state about numerous serious safety violations. The Vermont Yankee power plant, owned by Entergy, was recently found to be leaking radioactive water from aging underground pipes for years. Entergy at first had said those pipes didn't even exist. Oh, it's the first time a state legislature has shut down a nuclear plant, but that's also because Vermont is the only state with the power to do so.
And now, Lan, last week we had Barack Obama announcing, what was it, $8 billion for a new nuclear power plant?
Yes.
They couldn't put half as much into fixing this one?
The funding that Obama announced is supposed to be for a different kind of nuclear power plant design that wouldn't have this underground pipe problem.
I see. What could possibly go wrong?
And it's not the only one. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission now says that there are 27 aging nuclear plants in the United States that have been found to be leaking radioactive waste from these underground pipes.
Oh, brother.
The atmosphere got a little heated at a Senate hearing for the EPA this week. It was supposed to be a hearing on the budget for the Environmental Protection Agency, but instead turned into an attack on the EPA and climate science by Senate Republicans. Senator James Inhofe, Republican of Oklahoma, famous climate change denier, invoked recent errors in the latest report of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the hacked and stolen emails of climate scientists.
He's, of course, the one who said that global warming is the greatest hoax ever perpetrated on mankind.
Here he is Tuesday in that hearing.
How in the world can we justify doing something administratively? We're going to go ahead and do it under the Clean Air Act. We're going to make the endangerment finding in spite of the fact that the endangerment finding, by your own admission, is due to the science from the IPCC.
Inhofe and the Republicans release a report full of inaccuracies and mistakes criticizing the climate science. EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson defended the EPA's finding that greenhouse gas emissions are a threat to human health.
The Supreme Court, the law of the land, found that greenhouse gases are pollutant. They said that EPA must make a determination whether or not greenhouse gases endanger human health and welfare. And rather than ignore that obligation, I chose as administrator, and I believe I had no choice but to follow the law.
Had no choice but to follow the law. How refreshing. Remember, the last administration, the Bush administration, would not even open the email from the EPA that included that finding, much less enforce that law.
But Senator Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont, got everyone's attention, comparing climate science deniers to deniers of the Nazi threat.
It reminds me, in some ways, of the debate taking place in this country and around the world in the late 1930s. And during that period, with Nazism and fascism growing, a real danger to the United States and democratic countries all over the world, there were people in this Congress saying, don't worry, Hitler is not real. It'll disappear. Global warming is real.
If you disagree, let us know at our website, greennews.bradblog.com. You can follow us on Twitter. You can download us on iTunes. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Desi Doyen's birthday Green News Report. Happy birthday.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Meanwhile, back in the year one, when you belong to no one, you didn't stand a chance, son. If your plans were undone, 'cause you were brave for humanity, and souls to society. One day you'll wake up in the present day. A million generations removed from expectations of being who you really want to be. Skating away, skating away, skating away on the thin ice of a new day. So as you push off from the shore, won't you turn your head once more and make your peace with everyone? But those who choose to stay will live just one more day to do the things they should have done. And as you cross the wilderness, there's standing in your emptiness, you do have to pray. Looking for a sign that the universal minds has written you into the passion play. Skating away, skating away, skating away, on the thin ice of a new day. And as you cross the circle line, well, the eyes will breathe behind, you're a rabbit on the run. And the silver splendors fly in the corner of your eye, shining in the setting sun. Well, do you ever get the feeling that the story's too damn real and in the present tense? Everybody's on the sinking, and it seems like you're the only person sitting in the
makes me look forward to doing video, because you play a song like this and you can stand on one leg and play your air flute. God, I haven't heard that song in forever. I love it. Jethro Tull, of course. Skating away on the thin ice of a new day, and that, well, because I got it during the break, I got it quietly and patiently explained to me. The whole controversy around Olympic speed skating. In South Korea, you can buy, at this point, you can buy toilet paper with Apollo Ono's face on it. That, according to Marty via Dave Zirin via Marty. The whole thing being that a little dust up with Lee Jung-soo, who said that silver medalist Apollo Ono was too aggressive in a post-race news conference, and went on to say Ono didn't deserve to stand on the same medal platform as me. I was so enraged that it was hard for me to contain myself during the victory ceremony. You know, I get the idea that the world takes the Olympics a lot more seriously than I do. But still, I saw that after Michael's email last night from Norway about the fact that the Norwegian curling team had the better pants, I saw the pants. And this is the fun part. In conversation, the pants were explained to me. And these are red, white, blue, and gray argyle checkered pants, that there was only one other athlete wearing them. And I was given the, well, you know, okay, just guess. And I looked at the pants, and I looked at the pants, and I looked at the pants, and I went, John Daly, you knew that? No, I didn't know that. Those just looked like pants that John Daly would wear. You know, 15, 16, the Keystone Light, Milwaukee's Beast, whatever, and them looks like some fine golfing pants, because that's what they were. You know, it's a little too cold in Norway right now to be fielding a golf team. And those are golf pants. You know, that's something straight out of Caddyshack. Oh, I wonder if you get a free bowl of soup with this. Oh, but it looks good on you. So, the whole skating thing, and it brought out that I've been having some DJ flashbacks lately. I hope you can forgive me for that, but it's awfully daggum fun. And I thought skating away on the thin ice of a new day was an inspired little bit of lunacy there. I hope you did as well. Let's you know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or 304-658-3333. Let's do go straight away back to the phones and see what's shaking. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, is that Bob?
It is Bob.
Bob, it's Gareth out of Bucks County. How you doing?
Oh, doing good, Gareth. How about you?
You're good. Maybe you covered this subject already, but I'm guessing you heard, I'm just tuning in now, so again, forgive me if you already covered it, but I guess you heard Vermont will be nuke-free.
I have not covered it, but I have seen the story, and yeah, how nice.
Isn't that bizarre when you consider several weeks earlier Obama making the push for the opposite direction?
Right, and I guess they're going to close the plant in what, 2012?
Yeah, pretty damn soon. And that decommissioning process doesn't happen overnight either, though. So
no,
but it's going to happen. So I was glad to hear that. It just seems like clearly Vermont is going in the other direction that our president is. So I thought that was very interesting. You know. That this was in the works for a while, and it was kind of disturbing that this tritium, which is one of the byproducts of the rods there, is
right.
Leaking a little bit here and there in the pipes. And now it's the story is this might be happening to as many as 27 plants around the country, which is not very common. Yeah, and yeah, they keep saying tritium has minimal problems, you know. But again, I don't know.
Yeah, it's just a little bit deadly.
Yeah, it's got some, it's even creeped out to hear more things about Vermont's Yankee plant. There's some sort of Homer Simpson moment up there where an entire cooling tank fell down once.
I seem to recall that.
Yeah, but here's the big question. why does the Vermont, of all the states, Vermont apparently is the only one that has the state legislator with the power to close down a plant. Did you know this?
No, I did not.
No, and I'm trying to figure out, I thought maybe you knew the history of it. I don't know either, but only they could do this. And nobody else in the country, no other state legislator has that power. I'm not a federalist expert. I was just surprised, you know, that one, you know, Vermont always is a little bit different. You know, they always seem to be almost an island, you know, and when it comes to a lot of things. But I'm amazed they had that power, and I wish, well, over here, Pennsylvania did, and I'm sure you do. I have no idea what West Virginia
did. West Virginia does not have a nuke plant in it.
Right.
And that's a
good thing.
Well, between... You couldn't, Gareth, you couldn't put a nuke plant here because the blast, if you put it anywhere in southern West Virginia, it would be a hazard from the blasting.
Just the blasting alone, right. That's a good point.
We're all creeped out by the fact that we've got a great big tank full of grim death that could wipe out the entire Kanawha Valley and probably even reach us here 50 miles away, you know, methyl isocyanate.
Oh, well, that's... Well, you got enough hazard to deal with. that's a bad scene. And sure enough, the head of this particular plant was not telling the truth about the pipe leaks at all until they found it. They had to find it out after he said no problems were going on. So same old, same old. And
that's a concept that's sort of, I don't know, cross medium. Because, lying about a nuke plant leaking, sure. But then remember what the head of TVA did after the massive, you know, worst environmental disaster in American history, the Kingston ash spill of last year. The head of TVA came out and said, "Nothing to worry about here. Everything's going to be just fine. Water's going to be fine. Your wells are going to be all right. Public water supply, no, that's going to be great."
Right.
And he was just standing, and I don't know how you do it, Gareth, because I don't have that ability to just stand there in front of a bunch of people whose lives are threatened, whose well-being and futures have been put at hazard by your own negligence, and stand there and just lie, because that's what the head TVA was doing. He was lying.
Right, and this is one of the older of the nuclear plants too, and they saw the light here, and. You know, that really makes Vermont 100% nuke-free. They had one way down there in the Connecticut River on the very southern tip of Vermont, like way down there. And so that's it. I don't see them ever getting nuked now. So I just wish we could do the same thing here in PA. I'm only 100 miles from that one big disaster in this country.
You know, Three Mile Island, yeah.
Yeah, that we all remember. I was like 13 when that happened, but I haven't forgotten it at all because I saw that the movie China Syndrome came out the same year. And so both had an impact on me. And do you remember that movie?
Oh, very much so.
Yeah, and it was strange. It came out within months of that disaster. You know, and, it was really a very creepy film. And if you remember the Jack Lemmon character.
Oh, very much so, yeah.
The chief engineer, he just, they avert a near disaster at the very end. But, you know, and the thing was, the more you read about Three Mile Island, we were actually closer than you think. That big bubble that was in the reactor, it was much closer to a disaster, a big disaster, or I guess it was a disaster anyway, than people realized. And it's kind of scary that and everyone got sane for 30 years, and now that insanity is back because you know how short people's memories are.
Well, it's a function of something that I've been identifying for a while now, Gareth, and that is the generational quality of our forgetfulness. Because oddly enough, if you look, during the time in which my grandmother and grandfather's and my mother's and father's generations were on Earth, the Republicans never had a chance to really do to us what they did back, you know, when Harding led to Coolidge and Coolidge led to Hoover. They didn't have a chance to do that. Because that generation was standing watch and standing guard, and every time one of those freaks came along, they pointed and said, "Oh no, not you."
Right.
You know, granted, Nixon slipped through the cracks, but that's as much a function of the fall apart of the Democratic Party in 1968 over the Vietnam War. But no, you never, and Reagan was evil enough, but it took until that those generations were largely dead or dying before you could get the modern equivalent of Warren Gamaliel Harding in the form of George W. Bush into the White House. And even that took a bunch of electoral skullduggery.
Yeah, it also, you're right, a certain amount of dying off, but also I believe a huge chunk of that so-called generation that was born just 15, 20 years before we were, you know, the so-called, I guess for lack of a better word, hippie culture, whatever you call it, a huge chunk of them sold out. A huge chunk of them went to Wall Street, you know. And they helped make that happen too, I think. It wasn't just people dying off, you know. It was people being absorbed into that, into the establishment. Don't you think that happened with, remember Jerry Rubin?
Yeah.
He wrote a Portrait of a Revolution. That was his pamphlet. Then he was on Wall Street by 1983.
Well, the one that really grabbed me was, I can't remember her name now, but she is a right-wing freak, George W. Bush appointee. And, in fact, she was one of the judges that the Democrats knuckled under and confirmed back when they were being threatened with the so-called nuclear option. And this woman had been, she had been an avowed Maoist, not a Marxist, a Maoist in her youth. And then she copped and sold and went to the dark side. Not that there's anything good about being a Maoist, but she copped and sold and went to the dark side and became a conservative Republican. And just nasty as nasty could be.
Right.
Joyce.
I know who you're trying to say. I've seen the face. I know who you're talking about. But yes, we got a very good example. But as far as, you know, what worries me, I know that I'm 45, so I remember people who are 45 talking about the younger generation, but there's a lot. I'm having a hard time mobilizing the younger crowd. Do you see potential there? Have you met young people 20, 19?
Oh gosh, yes, gosh yes.
Or on our side, or do you think? Because the phrase I use is Xbox apathy. I see a lot of that. You know, I don't really.
Oh, and by the way, the name is Janice Rogers Brown.
Thank you. Thank
yeah,
you.
That via Marty.
I'm just hoping these young kids will.
And they are, but you identify a significant problem, Gareth, because, I was really struck by that Frontline piece that I watched a couple of weeks ago called Digital Nation, and the segment in which they focused on young, brilliant people. And the fact that they multitask and they tweet and they, and first of all, by saying they, I'm about a nano gnat's ass from saying whippersnapper, which makes just scares me of myself. But there is a younger generation that are coming up who are adept at multitasking, but the trade-off that has been made in exchange for that multitasking ability has been, the ability to single focus to a profound degree. And so
right.
I think that's what you're talking about. But
with all that information, how do you make them non-cynical before they're 21, you know?
At this point I think it's how do you keep children from becoming non-cynical before they're 12?
Like I've talked to kids who are like 17, 18, and here's a scary story. My father is on the National Science Academy. He's the top nanostructures guy in this country, and he had some pretty creepy conversations with the top economic guys out in Washington. And do you know what the Chinese may ask for as collateral on the next wave of Treasury bills? Because as you know, you're getting 0% every time.
Human labor.
You know, you're getting this took me by surprise. It made sense though. Guess what the potential collateral is going to be.
I'm afraid to ask at this point.
They may want the Grand Canyon as collateral. As starters.
What?
I'm not kidding. I've heard this must.
Now you didn't call Coast to Coast with George Noory and tell this story, did you?
No, absolutely not. This is the absolute.
The Grand Canyon?
Yeah, as collateral on, if we default on our treasury bill loans, which is a strong possibility, as you know, because they're sick and tired of these 0% returns they're getting on, they're still dumping them here, their dollars that they've, into our country, because 0% is still safe. That's how bad things are. So they're still doing that. But they want, they're starting to see the writing on the wall of the money we're printing, because, you know, all we gotta do is print $1 trillion and say, here, we just paid you back. And they know that's a joke. And they want some sort of collateral now, and they begin with national parks. So, you know, just
that's
imagine,
a horror.
Going to the, yeah, just imagine going to the Grand Canyon in 10 years and seeing all these Chinese Ni Hao Ma on the entrance. You know.
You know, this is another. You're familiar with the parody satire website, comedy website, The Onion, right?
Oh, cool. Yeah, you got me into that.
Well, have you ever seen, they did a couple of segments where The Onion had been bought by a Chinese fish oil outfit, and the name of the morning show had been rebranded as Ni Hao America.
Wow.
That was months ago. And lo and behold, you're sitting here. The national park system? I mean,
think about it. That's something that will never lose its value. You know, the dollar, God knows what's going to happen to the dollar, right? And it's a question of intrinsic value as the fiat dollar system crumbles before our eyes. You know, it's crumbling, the fiat currency system. It ain't working. And that has intrinsic value, and they have the power. Look, it's their world now, Bob, and we just live in it, as the business we cover said recently. And they love to shore up. They're shoring up these sovereign wealth funds over there, and they love having them. Makes them feel all secure and sleep at night. So, but they want to keep it going. And this whole thing where we buy their crap at Walmart, and they keep sending the money, dollars back, is working for them right now, you see? So they want to keep that going. It's a strange thing, isn't it, that's come to this?
Well, I go back to, I think this thing played at the Sundance Film Festival maybe in like 2006 or so. And it's a film that plays like a slideshow called Ha 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 America. And it's almost impossible to describe, but there are a lot of actual statistics in it, by my understanding, that sort of point up in a very unpalatable way where we stand in relation to the People's Republic of China. And they own our ass.
We own a huge chunk of them. It's a very strange parasitic relationship, but that's the way things are for indefinitely. But if you told a person in England 10 years ago, 5 years ago, that they'd have to start selling the Channel, maybe even chunks of the historical artifacts of England just to shore up their reserves, they would laugh at you. And that's exactly what happened. England's already on the chopping block. They're already doing it. They're always, what happens to England usually happens to us a few years later. You know, but they seem to have just sort of swallowed pride over there, and they're just selling whatever they can. Otherwise, they're just not going to make it. And that's why I'm not surprised by the national park story. You know, it just doesn't surprise me.
Well, I have sat, I've sat at some of these conferences in D.C., and I've heard very frank discussions of where American business is going, in terms of what the long-term effect of business with China is doing to us. You know, there's a battle, not a battle, I hate using war metaphors, but there is a profound effort underway to keep Whirlpool manufacturing in the United States. Because guess where it's on the way to? Yeah.
Where?
To China.
Oh, yeah.
And of course, you know, this has all kinds of, if you're one of these anarcho-Randian types, it makes all the sense in the world because you get to break the union. That means you bust your wage structure. You move the plant part and parcel to China. You start paying people, maybe $1 a day.
Yeah. We are.
And you're still selling your product for the same price back here.
Yeah, it's a bit insane. And they don't play fair. They manipulate their currency all the time. You know, they keep it down. You know, they're not really playing a fair game. But the thing is, well, to get back to my original subject on the kids, when I mentioned that to a young kid, I was tutoring, about the Cotton National Park story, because we had a long conversation with his parents, the kid turns to me and goes, oh, they don't own it already? That's when I realized how cynical they were, you know? Is that shocking?
It is and it isn't. I mean, look, there's a profound lack of comprehension of geography.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many Americans can find the United States on a map? Okay, one in how many Americans can name 30 out of 50 state capitals? You know, every state just about has a state history class where you learn all the counties in the state.
Right. Now, you don't want to talk about the dumbing down of the culture, and there's no arguing that, certainly.
No, not you really can't, Gareth. It's dangerous, but it's also for, and this is, you know, I guess some would say this is where I put on my little aluminum foil helmet, but it's also very good for the people who are making a fortune off of our ignorance.
Oh, of course, yeah. Remember,
if you're dumber than dirt, you can watch Fox News and take it all for gospel.
Right, and John Lennon, he had a song which I only heard, I heard after the fact, because I was only 5 years old when it came out, but I heard it in the 90s for the first time, called Working Class Hero.
Oh, yeah.
He has a lyric in there, it sums it all up. You're all doped up on sex, religion, and TV. And that has sedated the entire public very successfully, I think. And they want it that way.
Sure.
Yeah, they want it.
Because if you are underpaid, uninsured, drop-dead desperate, you will work for almost nothing. And once the United States has been reduced on a broad spectrum to that level, then guess what? We can bring the jobs back here after the wages rise somewhere else. This kind of globalism is a hopscotching hell, Gareth, for that just preys upon the next level down of poorer people.
There's only one silver lining I see. There's no need for us and China to nuke each other anymore. You know, there's no, that fear is going to go away. There's no longer in anyone's interest for that fear, because we need each other too much. It's China-America. So,
ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
And
I've been calling, yeah.
And you know, they've got the money. We've got the money.
Both do, yeah.
Yeah, we're the market. But we're the market because all of that stuff that's being built over there, most of their people can't buy it still. But that market is emerging.
We're going to the slow boil theory. You've heard the old story about the frog that jumps out if you throw it into hot water. Immediately,
sure.
Cool water and slowly boil it.
Oh, I remember when Glenn Beck tried to demonstrate that on television.
Right, I didn't know that, but then that frog actually accepts the fact that its skin is falling off, you know. But in our case, the slow boil is very insidious, because if you told somebody in 1972 that every single thing they bought, for their house, including Christmas ornaments, would be made in China, they'd laugh at you. They'd laugh at you. You know, and here that happened. You know, if someone told you that, we'd have to bail out the mortgage industry.
Yeah,
and the car industry, even 5 years ago, they would have laughed at you. And the slow boil has happened, and the skin is peeling off, you know. But people are so numb to the craziness that they just have to move on, you know. But it's happened.
But you know what? Manufacturing in China is like the seedy guy standing outside the schoolhouse gate, who, you know, offers a pill or whatever and says, hey, kid, the first one's free. And that's what that's what we did. As Ron in Raleigh is pointing out via email, he says, wasn't the reason we started this trading arrangement with China because they were an emerging market and they would become our market? Ron says, funny, but it didn't quite work out that way. And no, it didn't. And anybody who believed the lies of free trade, well, we know who they were.
Right,
because there are plenty of people, labor unions, saying, you know, free trade is going to be terrible for working class America.
Right.
And the other side gave us this big line of balderdash about how, well, you know, we're going to lift them up and we'll have a market for our goods and blah, 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 blah. And no, you're going to have, and the next thing you know, there you go, NAFTA, GATT, WTO, and we can't even make our own shoelaces and underwear anymore.
Right, and so you do realize that there's a bunch of, like, talented tool and die guys down in the Midwest who still hate Clinton for NAFTA.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so.
That's still a sore spot inside the labor movement, as far as I can tell.
Yeah, so, it's, you know, the Democrat, there's some Democrat blame there, too. That's all I'm saying. It's not.
No. I'm equal opportunity where Dennis Kucinich says, for instance, I believe in fair trade, not free trade. Because free trade, as it's conceptualized now, relies on the desperation of the next poorest worker. And the playing field is anything but level. There's no way that an American worker with a mortgage, with a car payment, with astronomical credit card bills, trying to pay for health care, there's no way that worker can compete with a 13-year-old Chinese girl chained to a table in the Guangdong province in the free enterprise zone.
Yeah, that's funny you say that, because the guy I tutored, his daughter I tutor in math, he goes to China because he has when he found out from one of the diplomat people he was talking with that the first time they went there, they were given a tour of a phony plant. It wasn't even real. Everything was clean. People were smiling. It was a front for the real things that were deep, deep into the heart of the country, where, like you said, people were chained and literally living in bars, practically. So there's tons.
Well, and in another generation, in the Cold War generation, we would have called that a Potemkin village.
Right. They used to do that. Right. Exactly. It was, so they're still pulling crazy stuff like that. People are falling for it because of profits, you know. But I was shocked to actually hear that was going on, and people actually fell for it. Because the Viet Cong used to do that when they used to give tours of prison camps, you know. The same kind of trick. But the Chinese, they're ethically challenged, but we did the same thing in the beginning of our Industrial Revolution. So... I don't know what they want.
Well, if we view this as some sort of an isolated event, it's hard to make sense of it, Gareth. But if we view it as something occurring on a lengthy continuum, then it begins to become much more discernible. And yeah, what you just said is the absolute truth. It's the Industrial Revolution being rebranded in another part of the globe. You know, Britain got the Industrial Revolution before we did. Then we got it, and we spread it, and now it's reaching China. And the same predatory things will happen there as happened here in large part. And you can find all kinds of historical examples. The Renaissance was birthed in Italy, and then it spread, and it didn't, and the full on Renaissance didn't get to Northern Europe and England for a couple of centuries, maybe three centuries even, after it had blossomed on the Italian peninsula.
That's right.
I ideas, concepts, all of these things, they transmit over both time and space.
Right. And a lot of those ideas and concepts happen in the state of chaos, though, which is strange, don't you think, historically speaking, that you're talking about?
No, because chaos breeds predation.
Right.
At the bottom line of pure unregulated capitalism is the ability of capital to dictate terms to the most desperate people, of a society, those who don't have jobs but need them. You know, everything. Look at the manifest evil propagated by that evil old fiend who's finally in the dirt, Milton Friedman, at the University of Chicago. Every bit of filth that ever spewed out of that man's head had to do with advancing capital over the needs of human beings.
You know what? he bothers me a lot. He bothers me because he uses a word that you use a lot, which has been shanghaied. You like to use the word Randy, and he used the word Rand. He's one of these guys who quoted Ayn Rand a lot.
Oh, yes, he was. Yes.
But the thing is, I don't like the way the conservative people took ownership of Ayn Rand, just like they took ownership of Jesus. That always bothered me, because she had some good ideas about sticking to ideals and the supremacy of reason and all that stuff. But they shanghaied everything she said. I know she was a conservative, but she had some other ideas that went beyond that. But they've taken ownership of her completely now. That always kind of bothered me. So
Well, you know, early on, it was first and foremost a cult of personality, while she was alive and even after she's dead. But
Greenspan used to hang out in her living room.
Yes. Oh, I think he hung out in more than her living room. But Milton Friedman, the Alan Greenspan, Ron Paul was. I don't know if he ever actually knew her, but he certainly named his son after her. And even now, guess what? I don't know if you're aware of this, Gareth, but there's a movie version of Atlas Shrugged coming out, starring none other than Angelina Jolie as Dagny Taggart.
Right, the golf girl, right?
Right, you know, and if you've ever read the sex scenes in Atlas Shrugged, it's worse than something you would read on the pages of, you know, Dear Penthouse, you'll never believe what happened to me. I ran across this capitalist woman, and she turned into a tiger in my hotel room. It's terrible writing.
I know. I can see how people would latch onto it who are, like one of Gary Cooper's speeches in Fountainhead at the end is, we're in danger of perishing in an orgy of self-sacrifice. Now, I can see how they could interpret that as, too many social programs will destroy us. I think they latch onto that stuff.
And that whole screed was a direct response to the simple and rather, frankly, conservative efforts of the FDR administration to try to forestall a little bit of popular horror. All of that stuff in the Fountainhead. And by the way, she wrote that speech word for word and nearly came to blows with the director and got up and corrected Gary Cooper.
Yeah, I heard that.
Over his delivery of the lines. And it had to be delivered word for word. It's like that long, agonizing, miserable screed in Atlas Shrugged, where right. John Galt, and you just kind of go, and okay, and then Galt sat down. Okay, good, I can keep it. It's cultish. It is cultish.
Yeah, I know, but keep in mind, in Fountainhead, the main capitalist character does blow his brains out because he sold out his ideals. So I'm saying she did have some good intellectual ideas, but at the same time, I understand how you can be scared of an author who wrote a book that was titled was the Positive Aspects of Selfishness. Yeah, I understand that. Because I think that was the title of that book, wasn't it? Positive something of selfish, something like that, right?
I remember something along those lines, yeah, right. Exactly. But you're right, they took her and made her into their own and imprinted upon her, you know, if she didn't say it explicitly enough, they made sure that they did.
Like, for example, they completely ignore the fact that she considered the unborn fetus to be a parasite. They totally ignore her social views. You know,
they ignore the fact that she's an atheist.
Right, totally, totally. So that's what I mean. They shanghaied Ayn Rand, and that's what bothers me.
They missed. Let's see if we can distill this real quick, Gareth. They took a science fiction novel and mistook it for economic theory.
Right. And they forget also that half the heroes are ran off into the woods in Atlas Shrugged, engineers, scientists, artists, people who are not traditionally conservative, you know. They make it their own in so many ways, like you said. So I just wanted to make sure I brought that up, because I don't think it's fair that I don't think she'd be happy with the people who call themselves Randians if she was alive. You know, I think she'd be somewhat disgusted by who calls themselves that.
I don't know. I've watched interviews with her, and she's pretty creepy. But
yeah, she can be. I know. But by the way, relating to her and these people, I tried to mention a creepy conservative group to you last week, and I couldn't remember their name. And I found the name for you, and you can look it up. You can look the book up yourself. It's called The Family.
Yes.
Yeah. The Secret Fundamentalism at the Heart of American Power.
Right, and the author of the book is Jeff Charlotte. Yes.
Yeah, that was a group I was talking to, and they do cite Hitler, Stalin, even Mao.
Yes, they absolutely do.
Great management skills. That was a group I was referring to, and they actually advised that guy down there in South Carolina, the one who was flying down to Rio to have a little quickie. What was his name?
Mark Sanford.
Yeah. So that was the book I was referring to.
Yeah,
that
was when he went hiking on the Appalachian Trail.
Right.
I never recognized Appalachian Trail as being a traditional Argentinian female name, but yeah, who knew?
And by the way, before I leave you here, what is the prayer breakfast? What is it? Why does it have to do with conservatives?
The National Prayer Breakfast was set up by that family outfit.
Okay.
And under the guise of, you know, we're all just going to get together and pray over our bacon and eggs and have good fellowship, they measure loyalty by attendance at the prayer breakfast.
Okay.
And it's sort of a separating the sheep from the goats, as it were, or the wheat from the chaff. So.
Mm-hmm.
And then they use the piety, the phony piety that comes out of it, for their constituent members to go back to their respective districts and states and say, didn't you see me at the National Prayer Breakfast? I was sitting there, and I was just a thanking Jesus for my grits.
So every piece of legislation after that is in the name of Jesus, basically.
Sure, absolutely.
Brilliant. That's what it's all about.
Look, all this Randian crap is packaged as Christian.
Right.
If you think back to the obligatory Star Trek reference for the night, if you think back to that line from one of the Star Trek movies where Captain Kirk stands there talking to the invisible creature at the gate and says, what does God need with a starship?
Right, that's Star Trek 5.
Okay, well, see how it works? I mean, So it's the same thing. What does God need with tax cuts? When in fact, his son himself said, "Render unto Caesar that which was Caesar's." You know, he didn't say, "Let's weaken Rome by withholding taxes until it's small enough to drown in a bathtub." But yet the evangelical right jumps right in there. And you've got Baptist preachers and Southern Baptists and all manner of co-opted right-wing clergy standing in the pulpit because it doesn't violate their 501c3 status, Gareth. They stand in the pulpit and they preach the evils of taxation and the evils of socialism. And it's really, again, it's one of those trends that's not really anything new when the union movement was trying to get a foothold in this state. The coal companies had the preachers on their payrolls to stand in the pulpits and decry unionism as Bolshevism.
As Bolshevism. Wow. Not even people in Russia would call it that. That's funny.
No, it was total hyperbole. But
yeah.
But as long as you cloak it, as long as you put the robe of the bleeding Christ around it, It becomes sacrosanct and not subject to question.
And how do they find it so easy to do everything in their power to defend what they call the unborn life of a fetus, and yet they'll do absolutely nothing to help anybody who's questionably on death row or 10,000 people who may die of no insurance next month? You know, that weird dichotomy. Is what's so bizarre about that bunch.
But it's not to them. They have no sense of hypocrisy, they have no conscience, and they have no sense of irony. It's perfectly consistent for them to holler for the vengeful Old Testament God to do the capital punishment, but then holler about the precious life of the unborn baby. You know, witness the Tim Tebow commercial at the Super Bowl. and the fact that they were trying to infiltrate that crap into college athletics as well.
God, the minute that baby is born, God help us, the conservatives are in power, right?
Right. That God only cares about the baby while it's in the womb.
Right. Right.
After that, hey, kid, you're on your own. Hey, Gareth, it's been great. Go ahead.
Sure. I just want to mention that then they always quote something that was never in the Bible. They always quote it over and over again, God helps those who help themselves. Never in the Bible.
No, not there. Just not there.
Just keep that in mind.
Exactly.
I'll talk to you later.
All right. Take care, Gareth. Bye now. Calling from Pennsylvania, that's Gareth. And just a couple of comments. Ron and Raleigh saying, under the heading Turgid Prose, Ayn Rand's sex scenes are as bad as those written by William F. Buckley or Bill O'Reilly. Lord help us. Yes, and then I took the loofah. Brian dropping a note our way, saying, Ayn Rand's supreme characteristic all through her thoughts and writings is her utter intolerance of any perceived weakness whatsoever on the part of not only her novel's characters, particularly her male lead characters, but in her so-called real-life philosophical works as well. Not so gentle caller. Best barks, Brian and Casper O'Moore. It is that she is. It is total intolerance and total disinterest in any concept of social good. It's pure, unmitigated, strongman tribalism, really, when you get right down to it. It is a throwaway. It throws away every bit of human development from the Athenian concept of democracy forward, because and that's the part that the Greenspans and Milton Friedmans liked about it, because you can utterly discount the needs of aching humanity and you need not care about it, and that's what makes me find it so unutterably sickening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
It's Andy.
Hey, Andy, how you doing?
All right, how about yourself?
Getting along, I guess. Been a couple of good shows these last couple of nights. Feels pretty good.
That's good. You're on a roll. Unfortunately, I don't always get to listen to you every night to catch your show. But I heard you earlier talking about the president in the healthcare conference.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't hear too many snippets today. I'm sure we'll hear more, but I just find it so totally depressing. And you listed some of the cast of Looney Tunes on the Republican side who attended, which, you know, you're not going to get anything even close to a discussion that is based on any kind of merits. And you have people out there like, I don't know, did you catch Joe Wilson on Dylan Radigan's show on MSNBC the other day?
No, I didn't.
Dylan Radigan had him on there, and this is typical of the Republicans. They believe we have the best health care system in the world. You know, there's nothing at all. There's no facts. There's nothing to base that on. But Joe Wilson, you know, the guy, I Live guy, at the State of the Union address, says we got the best health care system in the world, Dylan. Dylan, I'll take you to South Carolina. I'll show you the best hospitals in the world. The best hospitals. Dylan Radigan, what are you smoking, man? We're 37th in the world. We pay the most per capita than anybody else. We pay the most per GDP, 17% of our GDP. And Wilson just keeps on trying to talk over him, tell him how great it is. And this is just, there's no facts. There's no basic of logic arguing with a Republican. It's just that we are the greatest nation in the world. We are the entitled people. And then you have Dick Armey, the Freedom Works dude, you know, the guy pushing the whole movement with the teabaggers. And he's exactly the same way. I don't know if you saw him at CPAC, but he says exactly the same thing. We have the greatest health care system in the world. What is the
problem? Right, and Andy, that's
the problem is nobody can afford it, you son of a bee.
Well, there's that, and it's also the fact that it's just putting those old Goebbels-esque principles to work, that if you repeat a little lie long enough, it becomes a big truth via being
absolutely.
A big lie.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's stuff out there, again, if you haven't seen it, over at headonradionetwork.com, our news ninja Susan posted the video of Keith Olbermann's comment from last night. And one of the things that he mentions is the massive infections that have plagued his father since entering the hospital. And and we don't talk about it a whole lot, but if you go to a hospital, you can die from something that you didn't go to the hospital sick with in the first place. You can die from a flesh-eating bacteria infection that is utterly resistant to any antibiotics whatsoever. And it's a direct consequence of our overuse of antibiotics.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a better chance. More people are killed in this country every year by bad doctors than are killed by lightning and handguns combined.
Well, that's one of the reasons that the World Health Organization has us at 37th in the world. We have one of the worst medical mistake rates than any nation in the world. Doctors do make mistakes. That's why this tort reform stuff is baloney. Because there's nothing to help you if these guys chop off the wrong arm or leave something in your body, totally screw up. The Republicans want you to have no recourse. Of course, tort reform will do absolutely zilch, nada, zippo, to bring down the costs of our health care.
Right.
I mean, there's only one solution. It's H.R. 676, single-payer universal health
care. Yes.
One insurance company, which is the U.S. government, and get rid of all these middlemen just sucking out the lifeblood of this country. That is the only
Now, Andy, you are much more economically attuned than I am. But it seems to me that while I agree with you that H.R. 676 is the answer, am I wrong in saying that you can't just abolish the insurance industry overnight?
It's not going to happen.
I begin to see part of the reason. Okay, I'm sorry.
You're younger than me, maybe in our lifetime.
But I begin to see the reason why something like a public option becomes important. Because
well,
if
they
you
are one-sixth of the economy is what they keep throwing out. So of course they make a lot of money because they're taking up a space and they're bloated like crazy. Because they're taking up 17% of our GDP, where if you go to Western Europe, it takes up 3 or 4% of their GDP, and our GDP is much, much, much bigger. It's up there with the EU, but it's still bigger. So they're just sucking out so much money out of our system.
Well, I think that's a big part of it, and end-of-life care is an issue involved in all of this. But ultimately, I think what I'm asking is if there's a viable public option out there and people begin to see that it works and more people begin to migrate to it, at that point, doesn't some level of economic laws begin to kick in such that the insurance companies begin to die of their own bloated weight?
Well, a lot of these insurance companies, too, are conglomerates. They're doing more than just health care. I mean, you got somebody like a Cigna that's also doing some property casualty stuff. Some of them are doing life insurance also. Some of them are doing workers' comp. Well, actually, workers' comp would all go away, too, actually, if you had single payer.
And see, that's the thing. Workers' comp started out in a lot of states as a single-payer system. We had a completely viable single-payer system here in West Virginia until corrupt Republican governors colluded with the coal industry to basically rob it.
Yeah, once you privatize it, then you get the profit motive involved, and then they'll start gouging like crazy, killing small business with their fees, no question. And that's what happened a lot. I know California was the same way. They set up a public workers' comp, which actually is affordable for most small businesses, but the
right.
private workers' comp just gouges the heck out of business. So, I don't know. It's like you just, it's like you said before, though, the misinformation that's out there, the distortions, the obfuscation, the Goebbels principle. If you tell the lie long enough, it becomes the truth. I just get so tired of hearing that. And, of course, the corporate media goes right along with that garbage. Our system is just so, to me, it is just so beyond broken. It's just insane, and still, the Republicans still get the airwaves of that we have the greatest system in the world. It's, to be a working class person in this country, it's just utterly painful, you know?
And that's why, with all the justifiable frustration about what this health care bill isn't, I still think it's important, Andy, that we begin a process and then just absolutely bulldog it until we've got what we want. Because the Medicaid component, if it remains anything resembling what it is, the Medicaid component is absolutely critical, because it will allow the working poor who cannot afford mandated coverage onto the Medicaid rolls. And that's huge. Because Medicaid as it now stands, you know, you can't own a home and get Medicaid. You can't own a decent automobile and get Medicaid. So that automatically throws all of the working poor onto the tender mercies of for-profit healthcare, and their employers can't afford to give it to them. And in turn, even if they do, say, you know, like Walmart, you know, you can get healthcare at Walmart, but there's no way working at $9 or $10 an hour that you can ever afford it.
Yeah, that's a shame. You get caught in this no man's land.
Yeah.
Unless you're very, very poor and destitute, you might be able to pick it up because you have absolutely nothing. But then if you are, like you said, the working poor, and you basically have nothing anyway in this country because you can't afford anything, you can't get it. You're denied and you suffer. And if anything, by God, anything does happen to you, you go bankrupt. Because you can't afford to save yourself,
and you know that's the thing that we keep having, and I don't know what kind of a job we've done messaging this. I suspect that not as good as we should have. But when we talk about health care reform, there are people out there dying for want of access to health care coverage. But by the same token, there are people out there who have health care who are being ruined by it.
Right. Well, 62% of the statistic is 62% of all bankruptcies in this country are due to health care costs, health care claims.
I actually thought the number was higher than that.
Yeah. And I like Al Franken a couple months ago, I guess it was, when they had some of the health care people in front of the Senate panel, and he had that a woman up there from the Hudson Institute, I think it was, a woman who was big on that.
Oh, yeah, the Pearl Clutcher with the funny name and the pinched-up face.
She was a German woman. She had a German. She had an accent. Maybe she had a British accent.
Yeah, she was British.
But Franken just, ripped her a new one. It was great. How many people go bankrupt in Germany? Do you have a statistic on that because of their health care debts? I'll answer that. Zero. How many go bankrupt in France because of their health care debts? Oh, zero. None. How many in Denmark? None. Yeah, just go through the list. I'll get you that, Mr. Franken. Oh, you don't have to. My staff has already got it. I mean, made her look like an idiot. I mean, it's just amazing what we put up with here. Just that other countries don't have people working, don't have to worry about at all of losing everything you have because you get sick. And it kills me, too. There's Republicans like to tell you you're not taking care of yourself. You're not doing the right things. You're not eating right. You're not exercising. I'll tell you, I exercise every day. I do whatever I can do. I'm way in good shape. I'm over 50 years old. I weigh about 170 pounds, right? I'm 6 foot. I'm not fat or obese at all. I have a pre-existing condition. I could not get health care on my own. And I have that condition. I mean, it just happened. I don't know how it happened. If I lose my job, I don't get health care because it's already happened to me.
Well, and I'm kind of in
it's my fault, you know?
And oddly enough, Andy, that kind of dovetails with the, you know, whenever you hear about the medical research that goes down to the genetic level, you'll hear some right-wing phony Christian say, well, you know, we don't need to be messing with the building blocks of life or stem cells or something like that. And yet it's the same thing. It's already going on. Just like the death panels already exist in the corporate boardrooms of insurance providers all over this country. Speaking of pre-existing conditions, I found out about one that I have. I found out about it a year and a half ago. And I've lived my life. It was with me from birth. It is a birth defect. But it would be sufficient to prevent me getting coverage of any sort whatsoever.
Believe me, WellPoint will pick that up.
Yeah, great guys, those.
Right. They'll put you through such a filtering process to get insurance from them. It wouldn't be funny. They're not upping rates 39% for nothing in California. It's all about the money, man. It's all that matters to these guys.
And yet it's communism if we want to talk about removing their antitrust exemption.
Well, didn't it go with 400 to 19 or something to vote on that in the House? I mean, I'm surprised so many Republicans voted for the getting rid of the exemption.
If you're a free market guy, you kind of have to vote for it, don't you?
You'd think so. It's right up their alley. Right up their alley.
Well,
not that it means anything unless you have actual somebody coming down from the government breaking them up. I mean, that's the other thing. I mean, we could have these laws on the books, but getting somebody in government to break up a company and tell them, hey, you can't collude like that, and you can't take up this market, and you've got to break yourself up, sell yourself off to somebody else because you're too big. That's the other thing. I mean, just getting the laws we have to work is another issue.
And so when somebody like Loopy Marsha Blackburn says, well, we just need to be able to sell insurance across state lines. My God, can you imagine, Andy, if that happened? How would you even
Everybody'd be in South Dakota.
Well, that or yeah, right. How would you begin to have any kind of meaningful regulatory scheme for it?
Right. They'll go to the state that has the least laws, the least regulation, the one they have where the legislature is totally bought and paid for by the health insurance companies, where they can do anything they want. That's all they'll do. Like Delaware is the state you mostly incorporate in because it's got the most lax corporate laws where you can't even come close to breaking.
Yeah, right. Well, Delaware.
South Dakota.
Well, that's what I was about to ask. Don't Delaware and South Dakota both have the smallest possible congressional delegations, one member of the House and two senators? Yeah, it cuts down on the number of people you got to buy.
That's true, too. And Tom Hartman has said this. That's just what the Republicans want. They want to break down all the state laws. So any states like New York or California, which usually have the strongest insurance laws and usually set the tone for the rest of the state, you break that. You want to break that pattern and make sure that some Yahoo like an Elliot Spitzer doesn't come out, or Eric Denali, who used to be the insurance commissioner here, who came down pretty hard on a lot of insurance companies. You want to make sure somebody like that can't strap you, you know, regulatory-wise. So you open it up that if you're in one state, you can sell insurance in every other state, but you make sure you're domiciled in the state with the least law. That's all. That's the whole idea behind that. Simple as that.
It almost makes your eyes cross, doesn't it, Andy?
That's just what they want.
Well, again, drown government in a bathtub.
Yeah, it gets so depressing. And well, the bottom line, you know, the Republicans are just tax. No, don't tax me. Don't tax me. Don't tax me. And Jesus, that's our problem. The rich would only pay their fair share of tax.
Well, speaking of which, did you hear this thing from earlier today? It was absolutely astonishing. I'm trying to see which show it was put forward on. Just hair raising crazy. One of these morning news programs, the argument being made that Republicans don't like higher taxes because they're the ones who are paying them. Republicans pay for the services and Democrats receive them, and that's why the Republicans oppose them. Please, excuse me?
They use more of our services than anybody. talk about the, who's going to take care of those big mansions they have as far as police protection goes? What about the fire protection these guys get with their big mansions? What about their private jets and the airspace and the FAA? Now, what about their use of the roads with their big Escalades and the Hummers?
Well, what about the Army, what about the Army and the Marine Corps and the Navy and the Air Force that we send all over the globe to make sure that their petroleum profits within their portfolio remain sufficiently high?
Right, to protect their assets. And that's another thing, too. The corporations don't pay their fair share of taxes either. I mean, Warren Buffett brought that out, that what they contribute to our tax coffers in the 30s, it was only 7% of the contribution, and that's the way it is now. Only 7% of the tax receipts are coming from corporations. After World War II, it peaked at like 33, 35%, something like that, of the tax coffers were filled by corporations. But after Roosevelt, you know, ratcheted that up, he ratcheted up the taxes. He made a progressive system on the rich, and the corporations had to pay. But the Republicans have broken that down. You know, the Reagan era just broke that down, and now the corporations, you know, the Goldman Sachs paid 14% or something, or 4% of a marginal tax rate in like 2007. Unbelievable. They made like $12 billion in profit. They paid 4% in corporate taxes. It's a joke. It's just a total joke. Everything the Republicans say, when you look at the numbers, that doesn't make scrutiny. The numbers say differently. Corporations are not paying.
And I think the reason we find it.
They aren't paying their fair share.
Right.
That's the quote.
Well, look, I mean, yeah, you mentioned marginal rates. Look at the difference between the marginal rates under Republican Dwight Eisenhower, the highest marginal rate under Republican Richard Nixon.
Right. They were tremendously larger. But during the 50s under Eisenhower, I mean, Hartman just brought this up the other day. After you made your first $3 million, maybe you paid at a 30, 40% rate on that $3.1 million or whatever. After that, you pay 90% in taxes. And now we have an equitable, egalitarian system where we don't have this huge disparity between the rich and the poor, which is what we have now. We bring it back, the Eisenhower days. God, would that be a wonderful thing.
And, Andy, one of the things I was going to say a couple of minutes ago is that part of the reason I think that we find it so frustrating and we find it so depressing is simply because we recognize that there's no way to fight this stuff on account of the corporate agglomerated control of media.
Right.
You know, you and I are having a wonderful conversation out here, and I would give anything if 5 million people were hearing it. They're not.
Right. Maybe you have a couple hundred.
And a little larger than that, but yeah, come on.
Right.
but by the same token, if Glenn Beck goes on the air and says, you know, progressives are a cancer, look, the numbers are horrifying. About the best that Keith Olbermann does is maybe 1.3 million viewers. Twice that for Hannity. Twice that. Generally speaking, for O'Reilly, and even more, even more than Olbermann, for the rodeo show freak clown who declares progressives are a cancer. No one, Rupert Murdoch was willing to lose money for years and years and years, and is still losing money. That's why he's running Buy Gold Now ads. But he is an ideologue who wants the message out there.
Right.
We don't have any such. We don't have any, you know, Ted Turner founded CNN, they actually tried to do legitimate journalism. Then Time Warner came in and took it away, and for all intents and purposes, did a hostile takeover. And the next thing I don't know if you know this, Andy, but when everybody was laughing at Ted Turner's idea of a 24-hour news network, and he said it was going to be CNN cable news network, all the naysayers said, that really stands for chicken noodle news.
Well, you were there at the beginning, weren't you?
Not at the beginning, but fairly close.
Right, you were involved. But Ted Turner killed me, too, and Time Warner did come in and buy him out. And when he gave that talk, and who did he get? They had that guy running it now. I can't remember. I'm thinking Levin? Levin or something like that. But when Ted Turner goes, isn't America wonderful? This, because at that time he was worth I don't know how many billion they paid him off, Time Warner, in the stock that he had at CNN. He was happy as pie. And then later, you know, the Time Warner board, they had him on the board. They forced him out, basically. I'm sure he wasn't happy with, he could see the trend going on at CNN and the influence, the corporate influence they were having, which they did.
Right. And anything that Ted Turner tried to do with CNN got dialed back as soon as AOL Time Warner got hold of it.
Right. And there's a guy that kills him. God, is he liberal.
Yeah.
For a guy with a...
But where's the next one? Where's the next one, Andy?
Yeah. And I know you brought this up before. I know Malloy brings this up all the time, too. They're just these rich liberals, like a George Soros out there. There's another guy that owns the Progressive Insurance Company that's really liberal, too. You know, there's a few. And then all these actors and actresses. God, why doesn't some of them get into this mass media business? They're pooled together and they don't do it.
Because they do value the money that they have, Andy, and they don't want to just sit there and watch it lose money. Sun Myung-moon has never turned a profit at the Washington Times.
Right.
He doesn't care. He's got enough money he can afford not to care. Rupert Murdoch has enough money to afford not to care. Yeah, George Soros has enough money to afford not to care, but he's not interested.
Right.
And that, you know, that goes to a problem that is fundamental. And that is a failure to understand the essential nature of how Americans process information. You know, there's an article, I don't know if you ever go to Alternet or not, and I'm gonna betray myself with a little bit of, a little bit of the green-eyed monster. Big old article over there today about, what's the title of it? I think I've got it here. It'll just take me a second. Come on. Yeah, is the future bright for progressive media? And this thing's all full of, you know the term log rolling? Back scratching? You know, you talk about me, I'll talk about you.
Okay.
It's about a new book that's out. And it's all full of mention about how, you know, the new media is being created by, and the names of a bunch of websites. And while I realize that we're a fairly small operation, Andy, I think what we're doing is very, very important. And you know, I post over there. I write responses to blogs, and I've put God knows they've seen the headonradionetwork.com web address in their comments, right, if they ever read them. But this article goes all the way through it, and the only thing it says about radio is to mention the fact that Air America failed. You know, yeah, Air America failed, but by God, we are in our purest form older than Air America, and we've lasted longer. And that doesn't deserve some level of mention. Like I said, this is a little bit of the green-eyed monster, and I'm about half ashamed of myself for saying this. But by God, sometimes it feels like we're all the citizens of Whoville on that little dandelion puff, screaming at the top of our lungs, "We're here, we're here, we're here." The only thing is, Horton, the elephant, is not holding the puff ball. It's a Democratic donkey. With its hooves in its ears.
Right.
And there's a fundamental failure to understand how Americans process information such that we think that, well, you know, if we just put up another blog, one more blog. And I love blogs. I really do. I get great ideas from them. What was his name? Was it Richard Viguerie that invented direct mailing in 1968 for the Republicans?
I believe you're correct.
Well, they did that, and they made a fortune, and they got their message out that way. And then somebody said, okay, we got direct mail, now we need a radio. Okay, we got direct mail or radio, now we need TV. Okay, we got direct mail, radio, and TV, now we need newspapers. And it was a concerted effort based upon the Powell memo. You can just look it up and find it, and it's like reading a blueprint. It was a concerted effort to take up over every aspect of media in this country in order to exercise total message management. And our side said, Why are we losing? And the Republican Party kept walking up, is this your ass? Here, let me hand it to you. I wonder why that happened. Huh. How about that? That Rush Limbaugh, he's so recherché. Never understanding that that's why they were losing.
You're right on. You're spot on. You're spot on.
It's a tough pill to swallow.
Yeah, sorry to diss your show, because you do have a great show. And I think a lot of true believers out there know about your show, and a lot of people who are more web savvy know about your show. But it's just hard to break through the corporate.
No, look, Andy, I understand the failings. I mean, there's good and bad in everything. The good thing about being on the Internet is the fact that if people find us and people like us, they stay with us.
Yeah.
Because the sort of kinship, a mind-to-mind, a friendship, a family-like relationship really does develop. On the other hand, there's no scan button on the Internet where you can just say, and find, you have to want to be here. You cannot accidentally find the horn. You can't accidentally find anything, with the single exception possibly of stumble upon. You can't accidentally find anything on the Internet. So, you know, if we were to really take the next step forward, you know, we'd need like 12 grand to go pay a PR professional to get us on talk shows and get us plastered all over the big websites, you know, come to the circus.
Right.
And it ain't there. So instead, we've grown over the course of nearly 5 years. We have grown by word of mouth. And what and the kind of word of mouth stuff that we get is amazing. You know, just going back and reading that BuzzFlash article and seeing the comments that people wrote in there, there were a couple of times I did. I had tears come out of my eyes because it was just beautiful to see what people felt like was happening for them by virtue of what we do here. And so, you know, we're taking some more baby steps. You know, I keep talking about this video business. That's another baby step. And
you can't get on Sirius or something like that when the
There is, but you know, it's another ungodly bajillion dollars to get the signal to them.
Mm-hmm.
We do stuff here. For instance, back when John Fox, Peter Godbold, and I did the horn section after the program was over, we would connect, you know, Sydney, Australia, Tallahassee, Florida, and middle of the holler in West Virginia, using software stuff that if we were doing it with hardware, it would have taken $15,000 to do.
Hmm.
So, you know, I'm proud of the successes we've had. It's just frustrating to deal with the shortcomings and the limitations that we have as well.
Right. Another thing is to try to get more involved with Democracy for America, Dean's group, or the PDA, the Progressive Democrats.
They know who we are.
Right.
We know who they are, and we've had some good interactions.
Right.
But again, and I don't mean to insult anyone, this particular medium, Andy, because it has been so effective at whipping liberals' ass on the right-wing side, they want to look at it. The folks on the left want to look at talk radio and say, "Well, you know, the only people that listen to talk radio are, well, you know, right wingers," and they think that because they have been told this big lie, and we go back to it, that only right wing radio can succeed in a market setting, they just buy that. When the fact of the matter is, time after time after time, if you look at Arbitron ratings books, liberal talkers whip the life on terrestrial radio, whip the absolute life out of the right winger they're competing with. I mean, even in my own case with terrestrial radio, the year and a half I was there, they started out with X overall general just vanilla garden variety rating. Their number was X when I got there. The only thing different between me getting there and me leaving there was me. Nothing else changed. And the ratings for that station doubled and nearly tripled. But I was dangerous. And advertisers decided they didn't like me because Well, you know, I'd make passing mention of Snake Farm Insurance or All Snake Insurance.
You just can't tell the truth.
Oh, no, no. They did.
They can't handle the truth.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, right. It's straight out of A Few Good Men. Andy, I got to roll on, but it's been a great conversation.
Right. Anytime it's profit-oriented, they can't handle the truth. Anyway.
There you go.
Yeah, great, Bob. Thanks a lot. You do a great job out there. Keep up the great work, huh?
Thanks so much, Andy. You take care.
Right up.
Bye. Bye now. So we come up near the end of the program, email rolling in from Critic at Large, Reverbo. Where are these insurance companies coming from? Find me anyone over the age of 45 or 50 who hasn't had something wrong with them. Let's start with the insurance company's own employees. The flawed pre-existing condition is the corporate insurance network themselves. That's the ultimate pre-existing condition. The pre-existing condition that America suffers from is the idea that the sickness, illness, agony, misery, and death of American citizens is a fit vehicle for the search for profit. Obvious, one might think. But not to somebody who cares more about money than human life. Well, darn it, we did it again. Didn't get to half the stuff I wanted to get to. But you know what? That's okay, because tomorrow is Friday on the front porch, and we will just start off six guns a-blazing and hit all kinds of fun stuff. And there is some fun stuff out there. Oh, mercy me, there's some fun stuff out there, and we're going to hit it. And a reminder, just a programming note, Monday night, you got to be here because Jeff Biggers is going to be here, author of the newly released book, Reckoning at Eagle Creek. What an amazing, amazing piece of research and writing and damn near poetry this is. You want to own this book. Maybe run out to a bookstore and grab it. So that you can shoot your questions in during the conversation if you want to on Monday. You will not be bummed out that you did. You will be very happy that you own it. Because it's about coal, it's about human lives, it's about the value of human culture, human community, and individual human lives themselves. And in the stories of Jeff's neighbors and families from Southern Illinois, you will recognize your own. And looking in that mirror, you will be moved. You will be moved. Thanks, everybody, for helping us keep all of this going. As you well know, the Horn is a cooperative effort of the people who make the programs happen, from folks behind the microphones to folks behind computers. A cooperative effort by them in conjunction with people who believe that straightforward, truth-telling, fact-based conversation is something that America desperately needs and needs to return to. It is your support that makes all of this possible. And for that, we are eternally grateful, all of us. Thanks go out to John Fox, Peter Godbold, Ben Birch, Sue, Lottie, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy, on assignment this evening, by the way. Our Southeast correspondent is Matt Osborne, osborneinc.com. My head writer is David in Tennessee. The program comes your way also because of the generous sponsorship of the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.
go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! There are some nights when there's just so much wonderful material out there that you wonder how, that, well, it's just a shame only to have 3 hours, and this is one of those nights. The stars have aligned in some sort of harmonic liberal radio convergence, and we could do 6 hours. But we're not. We're going to do three. But they're going to be three absolutely packed hours, including your observations, your phone calls, your emails, your participation in the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room. You know how to get there, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com/chat room. And by the way, just to let you know, for the many of you from whom I got emails saying, hey, Bob, the website's down, there has been a significant amount of maintenance done on the website in the preceding 24 hours. And that's because, that's because the intrepid John Fox just absolutely got on a roll and went to fixing stuff, which is it's going to be the website's just getting better and better and better. So just so you wouldn't fret, no, all is well, all is okay. So what do I mean about the program being chock-a-block tonight? Well, it really, really is. Of course, you can't ignore the healthcare summit that happened today, especially in light of the fact that, well, I don't mean to make light of it, because it's so damn serious. Any of you who saw Keith Olbermann's comment last night from his program, if you were not moved by that, you have no heart and you have no soul. Wait, that's what I mean. See, the Repiglicans were not moved by that. But the fact of the matter is, Keith was describing something playing out that happens, and worse, all over this country every day. And for some, the outcome is even worse than what Keith was describing, because for 45,000 Americans a year, the outcome is grim death. It just is. There's no not talking about it. It just is. And my heart sort of broke watching what Keith offered last night, because that is a road in which I have left my own shoe prints. And it's tough. And it's miserable. And it's sadder than hell. And it doesn't have to be that way. So if you have not seen Keith's comment from last night, the 24th of February, make a point of doing so. Make a point of doing so. And it was rendered, the comment, in anticipation of the healthcare summit that took place today. And from the Republican side of things, my God, my God, my God. There's always a certain amount of wonderment when you're a child and you go to the circus for the first time and you see all those clowns getting out of that tiny little car. Well, the same thing happened today with the Republicans unloading at the healthcare summit. They didn't send their most serious policy wonks. They didn't send their most statesperson-like individuals. They sent their biggest clowns. No kidding. They really, really did. And to sort of reinforce that point, coming up in about, 10 minutes or so, we're going to have a conversation with Bill Scheer. Bill Scheer is from the Campaign for America's Future. And he did a rundown of who the right wing was sending to the healthcare summit. It reads like a rogues gallery of people who need to be in a rubber room, frankly. And so Bill will join us to talk about it a little bit this evening. Of course, there was endless, almost ceaseless coverage of the healthcare summit today. But one of them, one particular notation, caught my eye. Because, you know, we're so fascinated with the MB twins, Michelle and Marcia. Marcia. Marcia Blackburn from Tennessee. She was sent. See what I mean? Yeah, they sent Marcia Blackburn to the healthcare summit when the poor woman hath not enough cerebral power. I imagine she wears either slip-ons or things with Velcro or straps across the foot, because I doubt she has the cerebral power with which to tie her own shoelaces. But I saw one comment that she made earlier this afternoon. She said we need to fix health care by allowing competition that would let people purchase insurance across state lines. And, of course, never mind the fact that you can't purchase insurance across state lines or across county lines if you can't afford the insurance. I mean, that kind of goes without saying, doesn't it? Well, not to a Republican. To a Republican, it's all about figuring out ways to continue to serve and support. You know, the GOP seal should just have, to defend and to serve, and then underneath corporate interests stamped on it, as Anthony Weiner, or Weiner, not sure which, Democrat from New York, mentioned the other day in the well of the House. They are a wholly owned subsidiary of the insurance industry. And the Republicans, they were so offended. They were offended. But Marcia Blackburn, she's going to fix all the health care woes by allowing people to purchase insurance across state lines. And I got to thinking, you know, why would a congresswoman from Tennessee think that, of course, that was her assigned talking point. Yeah, Mr. Boner, Leader Boner, Pumpkinhead, I want to talk about buying insurance across state lines. Okay, Marcia, you do that. But I was suddenly reminded of what it was like growing up as a boy in Alabama, where fireworks were illegal. Couldn't buy a firecracker, not a bottle rocket, not, the occasional smoke bomb would be smuggled in from 11 miles away in far foreign Tennessee. And that's my point. If you were an Alabamian who wanted to set off bottle rockets on the 4th of July or New Year's Eve or whatever, you had to cross state lines to purchase your fireworks. You had to go to Tennessee. Imagine that. That's Marcia Blackburn's model for fixing health care. Do it just like they do at Loco Joe's Crazy Indian Fireworks there in Goodlettsville. The Goodlettsville-Hendersonville Pike used to be one long string of neon-lit fireworks stores. I don't know if it is anymore. I doubt it. My father, driving back and forth from Alabama to West Virginia, hated the Goodlettsville